I'm your father, Bo. The people of Afghanistan, the same. Khalifa Al Thani, the complicated nature of this.
So he's speaking in...
Wait. Just what you heard. Do you have any thoughts before we come back and kind of... Oh, but do you have, what's your first reaction to that?
I couldn't hear the last part, but he said, I'm your father, Bo, but then he goes, and the people of Afghanistan?
Yeah, and he was wishing the same blessing or greeting or whatever to the...
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know, that's pretty... I mean, you never know what the family members and everything, what they were going through when their son's missing, everything like that. I can attest to that because of when I got home with my mom and dad were, I mean, they were a train wreck. And I wasn't gone that long.
Were they speaking Afghani by the time you got back, though?
No.
Were they
on their way to Afghanistan to pack the
posture? Were they tweeting to the world after you had received after you had been rescued?
Were they
tweeting positive things about shutting down Guantanamo and returning these good souls to their families?
No, they were. I wasn't allowed to speak to them right off the bat. Remember, you remember the tour that I went on. I was in the hospital for a while and everything like that. So they were just waiting, kind of baiting breath, just kind of waiting for me to get to where they could get to me to see me. And it was an all-out lockdown when I was in transit on the way back, and no email traffic, Facebook traffic, or
when he said my son doesn't speak English very well. And then he went in to say, in English, I'm your father, Bo. Mm-hmm. I didn't really understand that.
Did he not speak English when he went in?
No, he spoke English. Fluent English. Yeah. And we're just wondering, there is one CIA operative that has come out yesterday and said that greeting is very important in the Islamic world, and he was laying claim for Islam to the White House end of the event. Do you know enough, Pashto, to be able to say anything about that?
One thing about it is it's interpreted. So depending on who he's talking to and who's hearing the message is how it's going to be received. So with culture in that language, you say if Gulab heard it or something like that, it would be a greeting and whatever. And then if you go down the road a little ways to the people who are all the way on the fanatical end, then it means another thing. That's the crazy thing about the culture and the language and saying certain things. Certain things you could say to somebody over there and everything's fine. And you say it to somebody else and they're going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a complicated
Sounds like New
thing,
York.
But obviously he knew who he was directing that to, his captors, which were...
Good evening. These secret documents obtained by Fox News show that toward the end of his 5 years in captivity among the Haqqani network, Sergeant Bo Bergdahl was said to have converted to Islam, and was, according to one eyewitness account, observed openly fraternizing with his captors, including taking part in AK-47 target practice with them, and had declared himself a, quote, mujahid, or warrior for Islam. And these documents offer the most detailed, real-time accounts yet known to exist, chronicling what Sergeant Bergdahl's life in captivity was like, and they show that the wayward soldier's relations with his captors morphed over time, from periods of real hostility, where he tried to escape and was treated very much like a hostage, indeed like an animal actually set into a cage, to periods of seeming affection and ideological alignment. Greta?
James, in terms of the documents, how do we know what weight to give them in terms of credibility?
Okay, so these are a set of situation reports that span 2009 to 2012, prepared by a private intelligence group called Eclipse. staffed by former intelligence officers and operatives. They go to bad places of the world where you and I would not want to go, although you go to these places more frequently than me. And they had a subcontract from the Pentagon to provide this kind of granular on-the-ground intelligence on a broad range of issues, including the Bergdahl case. I ran the substance of these documents past some very senior military people and intelligence people, and they told me it was not only plausible, but credible.
Senior advisor to Presidents Nixon, Ford, and Reagan. Welcome. Great to see you again. I'm really anxious to hear some of your thoughts. You know, the president in Europe this week, the spotlight, though, on what's happening back home, and the fact that many people are questioning what is the upside for the president on this, knowing that his approval ratings are already low, but that he's involved in this prisoner swap where you have five high-level Taliban leaders there who are being released in exchange for one sergeant with a questionable past. Where do you see this thing going?
Well, you ask, where is the upside? There is none. I mean, the White House had a ceremony last Saturday, 1 week ago, in the Rose Garden that they thought would be a great public relations victory. And as you said yourself, it's been a disaster for him. It's tracked him all over Europe. It's diverted him from attention to the diplomatic issues in Poland and Brussels and Paris and Normandy. It has deeply divided the President of the United States, the Commander-in-Chief, from the armed forces he leads. The bitterness and the outrage, we've seen it on Fox News and other places, of soldiers. When Susan Rice went on national television last Sunday to present this fellow as a man who fought with honor and distinction and was captured on the battlefield, that's completely the opposite of the truth that everyone else knows. Now, where did they get this? I think, quite candidly, the President of the United States has been horribly served, and I don't know who in the White House is responsible for this debacle, but I haven't seen a public relations debacle and a diplomatic and political debacle like this in a long, long time.
And you would know, because certainly you have been on the front lines there in the White House under several different presidents. Let me call up a sound right now where we hear the president defending his actions.
We had a prisoner of war whose health had deteriorated, and we were deeply concerned about it, and we saw an opportunity, and we seized it, and I make no apologies for that.
He makes no apologies for that, but then the story changes later in the week, saying that they were concerned about leaks from Congress about this high-level swap that was going to be taking place.
He's saying we have a soldier who was ill, and we wanted to get him home. There is nothing wrong with that and everything right about that. But the president did not discuss the fact that he walked into the Rose Garden and, in effect, did something that was comparable to trading five Nazi generals in return to getting Private Slovak, the deserter, back. Eisenhower would never have done that. The president, I mean, whoever put the president out there to do this without informing him that, look, Uma, we've had a five-day, six-day, seven-day firestorm from an event in the Rose Garden.
A week ago today. A week ago today when the release was announced.
Who sat in the Roosevelt room when they were deciding this, say, on Friday, that we're going to bring the parents of Bergdahl in and we're going to talk about the five people going to release? Did no one in the Roosevelt room stand up and say, are you folks aware this fellow's been charged with desertion and maybe collaboration, that he's no hero, and that a lot of folks in the military are going to be deeply angry about this, that our Afghan allies and that our own people are going to be outraged over giving away five Taliban killers?
It doesn't sound like a great swap. I told somebody earlier today, I'm not sure it would be a good swap if we were trading for a Medal of Honor winner, much less trading for somebody who may well have been a deserter. So, no, I'm not too happy with the deal. I'm also not too happy with the rule of law not being obeyed. Congress passed a law that said he's supposed to tell us. He's supposed to give us 30 days notice. And he just says, well, I don't feel like it, or I'm taking my presidential prerogative.
Well, he says that those in the Senate were apprised of what was going on and that these talks were going on. Were you specifically?
No, and I spoke to members of the Intelligence Committee today, and nobody told me they were apprised of this. And so I frankly just don't believe that to be true. But there's one other lesson I'd say from Neil from all of this. This is another reason why the people held at Guantanamo Bay should be tried. It can be a military commission. They're not U.S. citizens. But try them, convict them, and give them a sentence. I think this would have been a little more difficult had they either been given life sentences or given some sentences. You know, one of them's accused apparently of killing thousands of people, thousands of innocent people. So a Taliban leader in Pakistan who said that the return of one of these gentlemen is worth 12,000 fighters to the ongoing jihad. So it doesn't sound to me like we have a cessation of hostilities. It sounds like we have rather an incitement of hostilities. So no, I'm not happy at all with this.
You know, much has been said, given your rising stature, Senator, about what your posture would be in foreign policy. And many of your critics say, well, Rand Paul is just an isolationist. And say what you will of the president and his passive approach to this, they argue you might be worse because you would avoid any and all conflicts at any and all costs. Is that true?
And Neil, they would be wrong. Because what I would tell you is the most important thing we do as a federal government is defend the country. The most important thing that we spend money on is to defend the country. It is the primary constitutional responsibility of the federal government to defend our country. So no, I would see it as a priority that we defend our country, but I would also see war the same way Reagan did. And he said to his potential adversaries, he said, don't mistake my reluctance for war for a lack of resolve. That doesn't mean that we are nowhere any of the time. It means that we debate vigorously what are our vital interests. When we determine what is in our vital interest, when we determine that all other obstacles, all other possibilities have been overcome, that we do defend our country, we do defend our interests, and we do it with the understanding that we do it to win, not to break even.
So if you ever got wind that the five Gitmo detainees that we released are plotting attacks against us, either in Qatar or if they ever get back to Afghanistan, would you advocate tracking them down and killing them?
I would say that there would be a drone with their name on it.
And that would be the extent of it.
Well, no, I think that I wouldn't release them to begin with. And yes, if people plot to attack our country, they will be dealt with, and will be dealt with harshly.
Finally, on the VA mess, as you know, you've been a critic of the administration, how it handled, that is the VA administration, how it handles the treatment of our veterans. There are many who say it's just not up to the job, Senator. You either privatize it, give the soldiers vouchers so they can go elsewhere, slowly shut it down. What do you say?
You know, I did a lot of my medical training in veterans hospitals in North Carolina primarily, and there's always been an inherent problem to government medicine, to single-payer medicine, which is the veteran system, and that is that you have rationing and you have waiting lists. But I think it's inexcusable to make veterans wait such that could injure their health. So what I would say is anytime they have to wait beyond a period of time, I would give them vouchers to accept private care. Whether that means we transition more to that model, probably in all likelihood it is the model for the future. We would still keep some VA system because I think some of the VA can be really specialized in war injuries. You know, the people who have lost limbs and things like that, I think can probably be better handled with specialty care for war and for soldiers. But also I see no reason why the overflow or the inefficiencies of government medicine couldn't be helped by having or allowing people to go to private hospitals.
Iceberg, darling, right ahead. The tricky thing about icebergs is that most of the mass is underwater, which is where most of the danger is, darling. In 1912, April 15th wasn't tax self-incrimination day because there was no income tax, or Federal Reserve for that matter, but it was the day the Titanic sank after hitting an iceberg. It wasn't sunk by the iceberg. Rather, it was sunk by the bad engineering, overconfidence, and perhaps something more sinister. Some of the powerful men on board were against the central bank. You do the math. Nevertheless, the point is that which lurks beneath the visible poses the most danger. Most of the problems we face are unseen by the masses and often even the activists. We tend to swat at the limbs and ignore the roots, which like an iceberg tend to be below the surface. learn to look deeper. The USA is adrift in a chaotic sea, and we've already hit the berg. Will we go down? Eventually, but indeed not be now. If enough Americans can be inspired to course correct now, we may be able to repair the damage and recover. We can't go back, and if all we do is go forward on the current course, we're sunk. We need to revisit, restore, and reapply the blueprint for these United States. The future is not and will not be like the past, but the original plan for the organization of our governments is still the best plan to apply to contemporary society. Unfortunately, we haven't applied the constitutional blueprint for over a century, and we are taking on water. The captain is a fool, and the crew is an embedded, bloated bureaucracy of technocrats who've imbibed on the ideologies of disaster, like socialism, Marxism, fascism, and all the other isms. Transnational vultures are teeming in the waters around us, just waiting to pounce and tear us apart. The passengers have been numbed into complicity, passivity, ambivalence, and emotional outbursts. Keep in mind, in a high-pressure, stressful, emergency situation, only cool heads with solid plans and the courage to execute them survive. While most of the passengers are distracted by pleasure-seeking entertainment, frivolities, and fear, some do pay attention to the, quote, news. The problem is that the free press ain't so free. The American media is controlled by probably six corporations, which are all in bed with the government and the transnational bankers. Most journalists are repeaters, not reporters, or they're mouthpieces for the propagandists, the government bureaucracy, the corporations, whatever. Even the, quote, alternate media is full of misinformation. While the likely legal, quote, prisoner, actually illegal, quote, prisoner exchange of five dangerous Gitmo jihadis for one deserter is a legitimate story, the Bergdahl thing. It is being used to obfuscate more important information and gin up the emotional reaction pitting, quote, conservative red team fans against, quote, liberal blue team fans in an orgiastic spectator game called distraction. Don't fall for it and inform the rest of them. While we are being told to slaughter each other over Bergdahl's release, the community organizer Americans elected as chief executive and commander-in-chief is scurrying around the globe incompetently doing the bidding of his bankrollers. He neither faithfully executes the law, nor does he command the armed forces. He doesn't even command their respect. He's only part of the problem. The bigger problem is a Congress that has abdicated its legislative authority and a, quote, opposition party that only speaks against the other side while grabbing their own ankles and shredding the Constitution, expanding the federal government, and robbing you of your liberty, your wealth, and crushing the exercise of your God-given rights. Are you going to sit back and watch? Or worse, are you going to help them rearrange the deck chairs on a slow-moving ship that has struck an iceberg and doesn't have enough lifeboats? Or are you going to do your best to man the stations with those who understand the Constitution, defend liberty, and restore the republic from the federal government on down while the passengers rebuild it from the local and state level on up? It's an iceberg, darling, and most of the damage is below the waterline. Don't yell abandon ship. Don't wait for a response to our distress call. Get off your butt and fix it now. It's coming Tuesday. You've got primary runoff in Arkansas for AG. You got a primary in Maine, North Dakota, Nevada, South Carolina, and the Old Dominion. You have a choice. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and conservative libertarians or libertarian-ish conservatives take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their Keynesian masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives. To defeat the lawless hordes of cultural Marxists, statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists, first, you must crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Doc Rex Ignatowski, broadcasting to you from the Imperial Iceberg. Doc?
Doctor, and I'm your co-host, Trog Luddite, from deep within my cave, somewhere in the Cascade Mountains. I have to really think about this. I was out teaching somebody how to drive a standard transmission today. It was a brain burner. For people who have never driven a standard transmission, for somebody like me who grew up on it and run equipment and motorcycles my whole life, it's nothing. But there were some interesting lessons in that process. And I realized, you know, the biggest thing, and it was like, and I got a point with what I'm saying here. I told the gal, I said, the car never changes. I mean, you got first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and overdrive, a clutch, a brake, and a steering wheel, and an engine, you know, and a transmission. The car doesn't change. What changes is you. In other words, when I started teaching her, initially, it was, you know, down the street, stall out, grind the gears, trying to get them into gear, you know, get the clutch in, not getting the clutch in. Okay, you can stop turning the ignition. The car is already running. You're grinding the pinion on the, you know, it's just, it was just interesting from day one to the second day with a little bit of a gap in between because of work schedules. But, you know, she jumps in the car and then, you know, and I jump out of the car and make her drive off by herself. And then I jump back in the car and take her to a busier street, you know, where there's more speed. And what I'm watching all the time, it's all fundamental to me. But what I'm looking for is that awareness, you know, that point between can you hear the engine, is it lugging, you know, you got to engage the clutch, you've got to come off the brake, you got to hit the gas, you got to feather the gas, and this process, and you've got to do it, and it's all really fine when you're in my cul-de-sac and there's no pressure around you except for what you put on yourself. But when you start moving to a bigger street and you're going faster and you're getting up to third gear, oh, my gosh, now you got traffic. Okay, you know, now we're going to take you to a bigger street. Okay, now let's totally throw a wrench in the mix. And now I'm going to have you back up on a hill and control the environment. And it was really interesting. She was doing so good. And then when I threw her into the next environment, you know, where there was different stress and a whole different set of dynamics. You know, when you've got a, basically when you got a clutch in on a manual transmission, you're in neutral. Your car is going to roll. So you got to deal with the brake and the clutch and the gas and not kill your engine and not freak out and not back out into somebody. And then I watched her collapse. I mean, not like, you know, fall out of the car and have a heart attack, but, you know, I watched her confidence collapse. And so really teaching her was not fundamentally difficult, and nothing changed. The car hasn't changed at all. You know, it's an old 40-year Volvo I have that I'm lending to somebody that needs one while the car is being repaired. But it's the pressure. You know, first of all, it's putting yourself into an uncomfortable situation. Then it's that person leading you to the next step, and then pulling the stops out and taking you to more stressful situations. And continually training you to really do what the car already does. And I really believe that sometimes those life lessons are what you and I are attempting to do every week or every day on our groups, but definitely every week, is teaching people nothing's changed in America. We hit the iceberg a long time ago. You know, they put us in the Titanic in 1913 when they, you know, instituted the Fed, took us to World War One based on some lies, and, you know, instituted income tax, the IRS, and made senators be elected by popular vote instead of by their state houses or appointed or voted, depending on the state. But we were put on the Titanic when that happened. And then, you know, we rolled through this American dream, went through a war, went through a depression, went through another war, came home. Well, all the factories were blown up all over the world. So, hey, America had all the factories, and we had these tens of millions of guys that all needed jobs. And we became the industrial might of the world. We were the oil exporter of the world. Everything was good. We developed the highest level, you know, highest per capita middle class that ever existed in the history of the world. And then America started, you know, taking its goodwill around the world. Somewhere along the line, somebody threw a monkey wrench in the mix. And that monkey wrench was the difference between we're powerful, we're badass, we got a hell of a Navy, we can blow the hell out of anybody in the world and, you know, go to nukes if we have to, and we're economically stronger than anybody else. You know, we were a moral, i.e., you know, people will freak out, Christian nation, you know, family, God, country, baseball, apple pie, you know, you could walk, you leave your door open. If a man shook his hand and said, you can count on it, you know, I will be there, he would be there. Something changed, and it changed for the worse. And while people were struggling and chasing the American dream and going through the 80s and the 90s and then the housing bubble and cheap money from the Fed, we were blowing up countries, we were toppling countries, we were using NGOs and the CIA to, you know, manipulate sovereign nations because we wanted to get rid of this guy because so we could get this other guy in because then he would let our oil company in or our, you know, manufacturing company or whatever the situation. And we went from this moral city on a hill to this almost despised across the world. And if you spend as much time in foreign media as I do, and you look at the comments under the articles and the people I follow, I don't know, I got 30, 40 people that I follow that I respect that are, you know, that travel the world and report or live in other countries, so I get a different view of how people view this once great country. And the question is are we going to get through this? Just like the gal I was teaching how to, you know, back the car up on a hill and, you know, not crash into somebody behind you and not stall the car out 14, 15 times trying to get through the emotional state. But are you going to stop and recognize that the people you thought you were supposed to trust can't be trusted? The people that you trusted to secure your nation are doing some insane crap around the world, which is not securing your nation. In fact, it's making some serious enemies of some extremely powerful nations with some of the games we're playing and the sanctions we do and the NGO crap we do and toppling governments and call it, you know, spreading democracy and backing jihad and Nazi in different countries while we're killing them and they're killing our soldiers in other countries. It's a bloody-ass mess. The machine is the same. It's still America. You and I and people who give a crap, not the idiots who don't even know what basic economics are or why we're screwed up or why there's another crash coming or, you know, some people, it doesn't matter. You just don't even try to teach them how to drive a stick shift. They just, you know, they can barely drive an automatic. If the power goes out, there's people who can't even get through a four-way stoplight if the power goes out. You know, they just can't function without somebody else telling them, you know, arrow, get mad, get sad, hate this person, like this person, vote for this person. You know, I mean, that's the sheep. And will you and I ever reach those people? No, because we'll piss them off in the opening clips. But the rest of the people that know something's wrong, the people that are frustrated, and I'm not talking about frustrated with Obama. Hell, you should have been frustrated with Obama when he got elected. The guy didn't even have a record. Nobody knew what he was. His transcripts were locked up. I mean, there was all the reason in the world to go, oh, we got a problem here. But it wasn't just Obama. It was the Bush era. It was the Clinton era. It was the era before that. It was the neocon, you know, concept that we're going to become the Roman Empire and topple and police the world and have 800 bases around the world and either force or bribe or corrupt every country in the world to do exactly what we want them to do. I mean, somebody calls that spreading democracy. To me, it's kind of criminal, but, you know, whatever. I guess people have different terminologies for this stuff. But we're at a point where there ain't no wiggle room left. And you got to learn to drive a manual transmission because there ain't no automatics left. This machine's been running on autopilot for a long time. And the Fed's been manipulating the economic system. Your war parties, both sides, have been, you know, doing crazy shit all over the world. And the world's sick of it. Americans are sick of it. The world's sick of it. Other countries are sick of it. The only people who aren't sick of it are the sick, psycho, neocon, neoliberal Trotskyites who have some vision that they can turn us into a bunch of work units, you know, like the Matrix, and plug us in and produce in power so they can manipulate the world. Those are the only people who aren't sick of it because they are the ones that are pulling the strings. They are the ones that are controlling Obama. They are the ones that are controlling the Republicans. You know, they keep trying to get us into a war with Russia that we'll never win. And now, you know, so for some reason, you know, the country we've been trading with and doing billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars of trade with for the last 20, 30 years is now the enemy too. I mean, they can't do enough crap. These people are insane. And they have control of your bank. They have control of your politicians. They have control of the politician you think is the one that's going to save us. You know, I don't know why people keep looking for a savior and a politician. That's just right there is a recipe for disaster. But this is where we're at. And unless people say, I'm going to learn to get information differently, I'm going to quit hanging around with people who spend their whole lives and their whole days on Facebook posting the same freaking BS news that Fox tells you to focus on, or Hannity or Rush, even though I like those guys. But when it comes to when it starts getting repetitive over something that nothing is going to happen, just like Fast and Furious, just like the borders, you know, just like everything else that Obama's done, the Republicans aren't going to do anything because they're not real Republicans. And we would already have amnesty and an open border if it wasn't for a handful of conservatives in the House and the Senate, because Boehner would have done it a long time ago, but he can't get the votes. You know? I mean, people got to wake up. There are no teams. There's two teams. There's them, these oligarchs, these criminals, these crooks, these globalists, these fascists, these corporatists, whatever you want to call them, and you and the hell that's coming down the pike when this economy does its next reset, because the Fed's been printing $1 trillion a year nonstop on top of Obama adding $10 trillion to the deficit, and he ain't done. And the Republicans will sign off on it every damn time because they're not real Republicans. And only a handful of men that are going to fight not to raise taxes, but they raise taxes. You know? They're going to do nothing. And you can post the news of the day, and you can run around. It's really funny because I don't know if people who run around and are on 200 sites and post the news of the day realize that most people get those articles anyway in their news feed. You know, and that busy work is all that is busy work. And if everybody on the right, you know, the Republican side of things, whether it's Fox or, you know, Hannity or Rush or, you know, Beck or whoever, is all talking about it 24/7 for a week straight, it's probably a waste of your time and nothing's going to happen. The question is if the economy hiccup tomorrow, you know, it takes about a half a point, and the stock market crashes tomorrow, what are you going to be focused on? That's the question, because that's what's coming, and that's the important thing, okay? The fact that you've got a leader that for some reason, and these neocons decided to topple the government in Ukraine, which would be like Russia coming over to Mexico and toppling the government and then taking over the government real quick and then going, we're here for democracy, and then start to talk about moving the frickin' missiles on our border. It'd be, you know, basically the same concept, but Americans can't get that through their head why Putin's pissed off. And so here we are restarting the Cold War, trying to form the Iron Curtain between Europe and Russia, because Europe and Russia do tons of business together, have been for decades. have ironed out most of their problems since, you know, the USSR fell a long time ago. But for some reason, the U.S. doesn't want Europe and Russia to be friends, even though they've been doing it. And they are. And there's tens of thousands of corporations on both sides of the fence. I mean, people, I was looking at stuff today, Rex, and I'm just going, how stupid can people be? Do people even know how many Ukrainians are working in Russia right now? They have an open border system. There's like 6 million Ukrainians working in Russia. People don't even know that, those little tidbits. And they're like, oh, yeah, Russia, Putin and Russia. People even know that 65% of the trade and industry in the Ukraine is exported to Russia? I mean, people are like, you know, it's like they act like Russia, like Ukraine was the North Pole and Putin went up there and is trying to invade it. No, it's his next-door neighbor. It's the same culture, the same people. You know, it just happened to get separated in 1991. And it's like I'm like listening to stuff and reading stuff going, who pickled your frickin' brain? Why don't you do some research before you start, you know, quoting what news Fox told you or somebody else told you is not a fact. But if they repeat it enough, you know, just like the left, just like, you know, we talk about liberals all day long, if you repeat it 3 times, it's a fact. Well, the right does it too. And the only way this country is ever going to survive is if people unplug from the matrix and start learning to educate themselves on some important things. To me, 2 most important things in this country are foreign policy and economics. And you know what? I can't get a person to comment on it, like my comments, like my articles, because I don't know why, but people don't want to know about economics, even though it affects you every day, everything you do. And it's going to affect you really big in the next correction. And foreign policy, which is like, I don't know, it's some kind of insane thing that we're doing all over the world. And it affects you every day. People are dying. People are being disabled. Other countries are being toppled. Millions of people are dying, starving, being, you know, running from their homes, refugees. And people act like, well, it's not here. Yeah, but it's us. It's your money. It's your tax dollars, and it's your representative that's part of it or against it. And you better find out who, like what Rand said in that clip, like when he was referencing Reagan, it isn't a question of are we supposed to protect our country. It's a question of, after vigilant debate, is this a vital interest for our security? And if it's not, why in the hell are we in there toppling the Ukraine, where most Americans didn't even know where it was on a map until we toppled it? And people have got to get some common sense. If they don't, I have no idea what's going to happen, Rex. Because it isn't politicians don't scare me. Obama doesn't scare me. I knew who he was when I first heard him talk. I'm going, yep, I got him pegged. And yep. But that's not the problem. The problem is the Republicans hand them everything on a silver platter after they whine and go on Fox News and have a circle jerk, and then they go back and they vote for it. Well, that's not what happens when you have control of the House of Representatives. That's not what happened when Newt Gingrich was the Speaker. He forced the very liberal president to come to the center and deal with him because he understood how to utilize his power, and all these guys understand how to do is surrender. You know? So anyway, that's my opening. Holy smokes, what did I say? Back to you, Doctor.
Doctor, well, I mean, I think you covered the globe, but I think the gist of the conversation, at least the point that I got from it, is that there's a difference between a standard transmission and an automatic transmission. In a standard transmission, you have to coordinate the clutch and the gear shift, and you got to pay attention, especially when you're on hills. The automatic transmission, everything's done for you automatically by the engineers who built the vehicle. The Constitution is more like a standard transmission, but we're playing it like it's automatic. And I think that was the point that I grabbed from what you just said, because if you think it's automatic and you just get to show up and put it in drive every other November, you're part of the problem. Of course, if you're part of the problem, you're probably not listening to this show, but you know people who are part of the problem. It requires constant coordination, clutch, gear. Sometimes you got to back it up, because sometimes you go in the direction, it sounds all hunky-dory and wonderful and good up front, and they sell it to you, and then 5 seconds later you're like, uh-oh, this is not good. We're running out of road. Maybe you want to back up and go down the right path. So I think the issue is that either you do what you're told by the media, and the media is far more insidious than you know. It's in the commercials. It's on the weather. It's in the movies. It's all over the internet. It's in the so-called news. It comes at you constantly giving you subliminal messages to make you a subservient little cog in a corporate machine forced by government. That's what it is. You have to think for yourself. You got to look out ahead, make sure you're not going to hit the iceberg, and keep in mind that the part of the iceberg you see ain't the whole thing. And that is the problem. So, for example, with the whole Bergdahl thing, is it an important thing? You bet. First of all, you've got an imperial president who has broken the law. He just willy-nilly did whatever he felt he wanted to do for political reasons, just like with Benghazi, just like with the VA scandal and everything else, without consulting Congress. Okay? Well, presidents might be prone to do that. In fact, when they set up the office of the presidency, which they were considering making more like a monarchy in the first place, they determined that it was going to be Congress that would be the branch that would check the executive or court in that regard. But the Congress isn't doing anything other than the fact that the Republican big government losers speak against Obama so that they will get your votes in 2014 and then get them again in 2016. But they don't really want to diminish what he's able to do. They're just hoping to run the reins of power themselves. Remember, most of all, the abuse that Obama's doing was built up over past administrations, but most recently with George W. Bush. And the Republican voters were cheering it along. And then Obama gets in there, and suddenly it's a problem. Then you get turned around and get accused of being racist by the left. Well, clearly, if the only thing that you don't like is the guy running the show, maybe you're not a racist, but you're certainly just pissed that he's not on your team. But you really should have a problem with the imperial presidency, irrespective of who is in it. And that's where we lose things. That's when we look at the tip of the iceberg. Well, as long as it's a Republican, then things will be better or less bad. Well, that's not true. That's not true at all. There are rules that we put in place to limit the capacity of men to do damage when they're elected to government. But you're not using them. And one of those tools is the primaries and the conventions and the caucuses, which are going on right now. So in the meantime, you got all these economic problems in the country, and we're going to talk about that in the second hour, and you've got all these foreign policy global debacles where we're trying to assert this hegemonic superpower status rather than building relationships with people. We are destabilizing and wreaking havoc on behalf of a few corporate interests, and people are getting pissed, especially the people who live here, at least some of us. Some of us don't care. But you got primaries here. Are you even paying attention? I mean, Lindsey Graham is up this Tuesday. Have you done anything to take him down? People always ask me, well, you know, Chris says that we shouldn't just post stuff to the same six groups. Well, that's true, especially this show. Remember that we do this show and nobody knows it exists unless you tell them. And I want to thank everybody who shared the show and tweeted it and put it on Facebook. We really appreciate it. But nothing works better than a personal invitation. Just reach out to people and tell them, hey, you know what, there's something you should listen to. It's a different perspective on things. Oh, well, I don't like to listen to libertarian nut jobs. Well, these guys aren't libertarian nut jobs. They're conservatives. Oh, I don't like to listen to Republicans. Well, these guys aren't Republicans. They're actually constitutionalists. You know, maybe get a different perspective and start thinking. The whole point is, Chris and I can't tell you what to do. That's not our job. This is, America was never designed where we tell each other what to do. It's asking you to think, to look below the waterline, see the rest of the iceberg, figure it out, and then take action. Because if all you do is bitch, or all you do is take your myopic position that it's, you know, some kind of New World Order conspiracy, and I'm not saying that there isn't one, but if that's all you're focused on, then you've already been defeated. You have to do something. You have to work. And part of that work means taking action. And what action can you take? You can support candidates with money. You can call for candidates. You can get people to show up. Now, is that the only thing that's going to solve the problem, having elections? No, it's not. It's actually part of the problem right now that that's all that we do. But if you don't do that, then all you're going to do is reinforce the pricks that are already up there against those few voices of reason like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Trey Gowdy and Justin Amash and Louis Gohmert. They're the minority. You have to increase their numbers just so that they can have a larger voice. And if nothing more than just slow down this ridiculousness, that'll be a help. Because remember something. When this whole thing falls apart, I'm talking about the current crappy economic order. We'll get to that in the second hour. You're going to need people there who know how to make it better. But if they don't know how to make it better, all they want to do is rebuild the same crap you had before. It won't do anything for you. But that's not all. You have to do more. You know, have you thought about setting up a local committee of safety in your neighborhood and then maybe petitioning your state legislatures to get them to recognize it as a militia unit so that we can restore the militia of the several states, which is the proper, legitimate law enforcement body of these United States? Have you informed people that the Federal Reserve scheme is robbing us of our wealth, and even though that's how we trade right now, are you prepared for what comes next? Maybe encourage someone to buy gold. You know, there are a lot of things that you can do if you just understand the problem and resolve to do something about it. Now, this Tuesday, we got several primaries. Like I said, we've got an AG runoff, I think, in Arkansas. We got Maine. We got North Dakota. We got Nevada. We got the Commonwealth of Virginia. And we got South Carolina. And, Chris, I've got a caller who wants to talk about South Carolina, but you want to throw anything on top of that before we get to talking about the South Carolina race?
Okay, I got my mute off. I liked your perception of the analogy. That was pretty interesting. You know, you said something that was really important, and I think that that's what we try to do more than anything else, is not to repeat the news of the day, but to get you to see what's really going on besides the news of the day, the undercurrents, and you talk about the lower level of the iceberg. Because those are the things that are going to devastate us. You know, these little things, even though they're big things, but, you know, Obama can pop them out every 2 weeks. He breaks the law again and again and again and again, and nothing changes because you got nobody in there that'll do anything about it. And, well, not nobody, but in terms of leadership in the House and Senate, you know, you got Obama supporters, not Obama opposers. So, but I think that the thing that you said that was key was thinking. You know, thinking is not repeating. Thinking is not going, okay, this is what I got to go talk about because everybody else is talking about it. But to me, it's more of a strategy. It's saying, okay, here's what's going on. Everybody's talking about it. So while this is going on, what are they really doing behind our back? That's thinking, because that's where your critical mind goes. 90% of the time, whatever's running down the pike on social media and the news is a distraction. So the question is, what's really going on? Like a couple of weeks ago, NDAA got passed again with no argument from the Republicans or the Democrats, and they can still throw American citizens in jail without cause, indefinitely. And nobody talked about it. The NSA thing, nothing changed. Nothing changed, and they're breaking in new programs, and nobody talks about it. The economy, I know four or five people that talk about any of the real issues that are really going on in the economy, and the rest of them are just lying with the rest of them because they don't know what else to say because it's screwed up, and it's going down the pike at 1,000 miles an hour because of all this printing and borrowing, and there ain't nothing recovering, you know, and they lie about it. And so you've got to ask yourself, why won't they talk about these core critical things? You know, what's going on in our foreign policy? The average person doesn't even know that we have, you know, this whole new division called AFRICOM, and the U.S. military is in 45 countries in Africa. Oh, well, what are they doing there? Well, I don't know. They probably tell you they're spreading democracy. I don't know. Do some research. You probably won't like it. So that's the point, thinking. Get past the smoke and the haze, the bread and the circuses, and the news of the day, and use your brain, because we need thinking people, because as it gets worse, people have got can't be in reaction mode. They got to be in action mode. That's really what it's about. Go ahead. You're up.
Well, yeah, I think that that's a very valid point. And here's the thing is you can't anticipate every problem, but we're at the tail end of some problems that we've had for a while. So you don't have to anticipate them. We're seeing the inevitable results. Now, what are all the solutions? Well, other than following the Constitution, it requires the resolution of critical thinking and creative development of ideas. And that's the thing about a free market. You know, people say, oh, we're going to run out of energy in 100 years at the current rate, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but you're not factoring in what else might come up that we haven't even envisioned, and we build a structure in government that thwarts it. And the way that they do it is that they work for a group of interests while they talk to you and pander with the buzzwords. This Bergdahl story is a legitimate story, but it is not a 24/7 story. And they are, and like Chris said, when they are on something this hard, you better bet your ass at least six other things are going on that they don't want you to know about. And one of the biggest culprits, one that's jumped out on the Benghazi thing, the VA scandals, Bergdahl and all this stuff, and sounds real conservative, is that pink-panty little girl from South Carolina, Miss Lindsey Graham. And I'm going to bring on Marshall Culpepper right after this short 30-minute clip to talk about her.
It doesn't bother me one bit for the National Security Administration to have my phone number. Mr. President, you did what you had the authority to do, and I congratulate you. I can't imagine filibustering the bill that I like. I can't imagine filibustering the bill I'm actually for. I think we can take a hit. Obamacare will take a hit, but it won't be defunded.
And I don't do this much, but I want to thank Ted Kennedy.
So, Mr. President, you made the right call today. We helped President Obama when he needed our help the most.
All right, that was Miss Lindsey Graham trying to get reelected in South Carolina. We got on the line with us, Marshall Culpepper. Marshall, you're live with Rex and Trog. What's up?
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me on. Yeah, we got a big day coming up Tuesday. I've been, you know, boots on the ground taking care of my area of South Carolina. You can tell you're with the right candidate when your candidate is the only one in the race that just has natural grassroots support, people taking action. Me and my wife in the past 24 to 48 hours have put up over 130 signs that state very clearly, lose Lindsey, vote Bright. And that's the guy I've thrown in with on this election is Lee Bright. We've got to get rid of Lindsey Graham. He's the most dangerous man in America because he has that conservative veneer, but votes with the Democrats and Barack Obama over 50% of the time. He supported the TARP bailouts. What he said was he trusted Ben Bernanke and Hank Paulson at the time. And I may be alone here, but I think it's time for a senator to retire when he says he trusts a Federal Reserve bankster. That's just me. And
nope,
he's not a conservative. He opposed Ted Cruz's plan to defund Obamacare and is now trying to bait South Carolina voters with a bill that supposedly will allow us to opt out of Obamacare. I'm like, what happened to standing on the Constitution? It's like, okay, I'm going to get my people out of this constitutional quagmire, but the rest of the country, you're screwed. And I helped stick you with being screwed. And that's his position on that.
Well, it's disingenuous. I mean, you know, it's disingenuous because, and this is what Lindsey's not the only problem, but of course Tuesday's a big day, so we're going to talk about her. But all of the cohorts of Lindsey Graham, the Jihad Jade McCommons and your Mitch McConnells and crony Cornyns and that entire clique of rhinos, they have the same modus operandi. It's sort of like, you know, well, I voted 41 times to defund Obamacare. Well, but none of your votes counted because you knew Harry Reid was going to kill it. And any time that the vote counted, like the cloture vote, which would have closed debate and put the motion on the floor, which they did with the debt ceiling, did it with Obamacare, you know, they say, well, we have to vote to move forward. Well, but then with a democratically controlled Senate, you just handed the Democrats everything they wanted. Well, we have to avoid a government shutdown. Why? Why is that so scary? First of all, the shutdown that they had over the Obamacare thing that allegedly Ted Cruz orchestrated, which I find dubious at best, was shut down 17% of a federal government that's 40% bigger than the 95-96 shutdowns. What do we lose? It's ridiculous. And in fact, if you look at the jobs numbers, in 95 and 96, after the shutdown, people got jobs. We have the highest, the largest non-participation in our labor force now than we have ever had. And people like Lindsey Graham talk conservative in order to gin up the votes, and then they go ahead and legislate on behalf of bigger government. All they want is to be in control of it rather than the, quote, opposition. But that's the only difference between them. And when you got people out there who are willing to stand up to them, and some people will say to you, well, but your candidate, Marshall, maybe he can't win. Maybe he's not as, you know, at least we know Lindsey Graham's a known quantity. Yeah, he's a crappy quantity. Even if this guy is bad, he doesn't have the clout that Lindsey has for as long as she's been in D.C. So that'll be a help. And the biggest problem, and Chris talked about this earlier, is the senators are elected by the two or three large population urban centers in each state. They are not elected by the state at large because of the 17th Amendment. Back to you, Lindsey.
Exactly.
Rip on Lindsey.
No, the situation we have in this, we have a crowded race. If anybody's been paying attention, there's six candidates. I'm going to stay above throwing mud at candidates that are challengers, even though they themselves have thrown mud at the front runners. But there's only three people that have approached this race in a manner in which to beat Lindsey Graham, because the only way to beat Lindsey Graham is to expose Lindsey Graham. And those three men are the guy I'm backing, Lee Bright, Bill Connor, who's a good person. Him and Lee, actually, we had the big debate last night, and him and Lee, before the debate started, had a moment that they took between the two to pray for each other. And that shows the type of men that both of them are. And the third one is Richard Cash. That man, from what I understand, has invested a lot of his personal money because he sees his children's future. He has a beautiful family. He sees his children's future being threatened by the likes of Lindsey Graham, who is turning out Democrats in this. There's actually one thing I wanted to read to you about Lindsey Graham I thought you guys would appreciate. It's a little bit Dr. Seussian, but what the heck. All right, that Lindsey Graham.
But don't say they should expose Lindsey Graham ever again. That just doesn't sound right.
Well, then we could answer the question about the more sensitive physical issues.
Yeah.
But
go ahead, read your Dr. Seuss.
All right. That Lindsey Graham. I do not like that Lindsey Graham. Could he buy your vote? Not gold or money, far from remote. Would you vote for Graham? I do not like that girly man. The NSA, the Bill of Rights, climate change, I've got all night. I do not like him in SC. Not the U.S., not in D.C. He voted for Obamacare, Elena Kagan, Sota Sotomayor. Graham voted for the debt increase, and now he wants full amnesty. So do you have a brain? A vote for Graham? Now that's insane. Lee Bright gets my vote. A family man that doesn't gloat. No pork-filled budget increase. His pro-life stance will never cease. He has an A from the NRA, and in my book, that's A-OK. A vote for Bright, everyone should, to save this country for the good. So
awesome.
How do you fellas feel about that one?
That's good stuff.
I'm gonna go ahead and put it out there that I can't take credit for it. That was not my original work, but I figured it'd be a good thing to share.
I think, you know, Rex, I think what we should do is we should write a poem each every week and read it on the air.
Don't make that work for me. I'll stop right now. We'll stop doing the show.
Oh, but
no,
work
was,
is good for you. It's
the
opposite of what Lindsey Graham does.
Mm-hmm.
He just lays down and gives the Democrats everything they want. One thing that was interesting from the debate last night, early on they asked about a state problem, the Port of Charleston, which I agree the federal government has a mandate, somewhat, if they're going to take our tax dollars to do infrastructure projects. So we have a port in Charleston that needs to be deepened. It's a vital economic interest for the entire country. Speaking of economics, Lindsey Graham claims that he knows how to deepen our port in Charleston. So I propose that we skip this primary election. I've got a brick. If any of you guys got a shovel, we can just toss him overboard and let him fix that problem. You see what I'm saying? Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to ask, how's the campaign going?
Well, the last poll that came out is the first poll that shows Graham avoiding a runoff, and it was done by a rather liberal source. The campaign overall is going great. Lee Bright's still been the clear front runner. The guy who was in second in that, I guess you could call it a poll, that showed Lindsey Graham escaping a runoff, was Richard Cash, and he's one of the good guys in this race. So it's looking like, in all honesty, it's going to be close, but we're going to hold Graham under 50%. There's enough people in the race to siphon votes away from him. It's just a matter of who is in the runoff. And as far as I'm concerned, Lee Bright's my guy, and I pray to God it's him. But Richard Cash or Bill Connor would be just fine with me. I'd have no problem voting for people who actually read the Constitution, as opposed to, say, comments like Lindsey Graham's famous, tell them to shut up, you don't get a lawyer, and his whole, there needs to be limits on free speech because we're in a war of terror. I meant war on terror.
Yeah. the stuff that comes out of his mouth is because he's trying to sound tough. You know, she's trying to sound like she's one of the, you know, the tough on foreign policy. Because, you know, red meat Republican voters, they're like pro-military and they're pro-Americans taking names and kicking ass and all that good stuff. What they don't realize is that, yeah, we're very pro-military and we're very pro-kicking ass when the conflict is necessary and of a vital interest. Yeah, you go in there and you kick ass. George Bush said that in 2000 when he accepted the RNC nomination, that we won't have protracted conflicts, and when we fight, we'll fight for a decisive victory. Well, how's that worked out? You know, his dad sent a 500,000 troops to liberate a tiny Arab emirate, you know, Kuwait, right? And he sent 130,000 troops to take over gigantic Iraq. It's just silly. It's clearly not designed to do what they said, and that's the problem with these guys, is that they give you what you want as voters rhetorically, but their actions don't match up. And it's not that hard to figure it out because their actions are pretty easy to spot, which is the number one argument for what we're always talking about, which is constitutional limits on power, because even the best. Even your Ron Paul, your Rand Paul, your Thomas Jefferson, they're going to screw up. They're men, and that's why we don't give them that much power. But we give them power and responsibility in specific areas to do that job, which the federal government is failing. Now, one thing I want to ask you about, Marshall, and I'll let you and Chris chat. You said it's a crowded field. Well, some people, you know, well, we need a candidate that can win, and this is, you know, it's dividing, and it's – what's wrong – with competitive races? I mean, you said the two candidates who were debating last night prayed for each other before they started. What's wrong with vigorous competitive primaries to select the best candidate? And why should we have one selected in advance? How does that further liberty? And then the other question I want you to talk about is if any of these guys aren't even – are just one iota better than Graham – wouldn't that be worth putting one of them up there?
Well, I definitely agree. With the crowded field, I can't say that everybody in the race would be that good of a candidate or that good of a senator. To me, the key thing in this race is there's some people, I don't know if their heart's in it. If you're going against Lindsey Graham, you should at least mention his name or something about his voting record in your ads. We have candidates that got in late in the game, and I'm for underdogs, but we have a candidate that's been in this race for the longest and has not mentioned Lindsey Graham's name in her ad. Well, I gave it away there, but in the ads that they've put out. The first ad says Barack Obama wants to fundamentally change America, and it started off with his clip from 2008. And I'm like, that's pandering to the Republican Party. We know this already. But when you don't mention your opponent's name, you just say, Obama's bad and we need to change Washington, to me that's not going after the target. The target is Senator Graham. The target is his voting record. You don't have to, in a Republican primary, tell people that Barack Obama is bad. We know it. But to not take the fight to the person you're supposedly wanting to beat, to me that's just... I know Miss Lindsay is Miss Lindsay, but you
that's
don't
siphoning.
Treat...
That's
yeah,
how the, you know,
that's just straight
that's
siphoning
votes. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Instead of letting Lee Bright and the other candidates who actually stand on principle make their case against Lindsey Graham in a Republican primary, where clearly the intention is to defeat, quote, the Democrat and Obama, whoever wins, although I suspect that Lindsey doesn't do that because that's not his behavior, then when you have somebody who's out there just, you know, giving you, you know, standard Frank Luntz-tested Republican talking points, they're just designed to split votes. This is the same thing that the allegedly Libertarian candidate for governor did here in the Commonwealth and cost Ken Cuccinelli the governorship, and now we got a Clinton operative ruining the Commonwealth of Virginia. These things have consequences, and they matter, and the biggest problem, as I see it, with these races is that people are afraid of competition because they think it makes you weaker in the general, which I think is silly.
That's bull crap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm all for crowded field.
People want debate. They want people to tell you what you believe in and what you're going to do, and they want people want validation. You know, when I get somebody, it's the same. It's just like, you know, how Rex and I hooked up and ended up doing the show, you know, was that point where, you know, because our biggest argument is quit being a sheep, quit being a pawn, quit being a, you know, a free newspaper delivery person, you know, on Facebook posting the news of the day, and start thinking, get around people who dig deep, who challenge the status quo, you know, who understand the core principles of this country, who understand what's broken, who understand economics, who have a grasp on foreign policy and why it's destroying our country. You know, this is not a question of, you know, we need to take the fight to our enemies. This is a question of, will the U.S. survive the next economic crash, because we're spread all over the world and we're pissing off some big countries with big militaries. And so, you know, people who they, when they speak, you're going, now there's an intelligent person, there's a person who knows what they believe in, and it doesn't matter, it doesn't mean I have to agree with every point. It's very rare to find anybody in life you agree with all the time, or even most of the time, but their core principles are there, and that's what needs to get out there in these primaries. You know, this has become a game show of the billionaires. That's all this is. Is who are we going to get in there who's going to push our agenda? And our agenda, you know, if anybody studied, you know, anything that went on at Bilderberg, is, you know, world dominance, you know, the corporatism, the TPP treaty, the, you know, where corporations literally have more power than the countries they're operating in. It's fascism on a global scale. And America is a state of that, not a country anymore. You know, they want to merge us. You know, I mean, why are our borders wide open? Well, all you got to do is study the EU, and you realize that this open border thing didn't come from here. It came from there. You know, they want to merge all people. They want to dummy down everybody. They want to get everybody, you know, making the same poverty wages, paying all the taxes to the people at the top, and these unelected bureaucrats from the EU to tell us, you know, what kind of car you're going to drive, what kind of phone you're going to own, what kind of toilet you're going to own. That's the model of the EU, and the liberals and many Republicans, I think the liberals want it, and Republicans are okay with it as long as they get to run things once in a while. That's how bad
exactly.
It is. That's how bad it is in this country.
The Republicans' purpose is to be more efficient Democrats. That's pretty much their agenda. They just want to be.
That's
they just want to be Democrats, but do it more efficiently, as if that's even possible. But gentlemen, believe it or not, we're 15 minutes into
hour two. Marshall, if you want to stick around, by all means do. If you got to blaze out just before we go into the next segment, I want you to make a comment on what people will do to help Lee Bright or any of the other serious candidates defeat Lindsey Graham. The most important thing is to defeat Lindsey Graham because she's dangerous and I don't want her coming back up to D.C.
What happens in a runoff? I'm sorry.
All right, well, yeah, the runoff in the event we have that much success will be on the 24th of June, so there will only be a two-week period there. I know Senator Bright has
Who ends up in the runoff?
Huh?
If you get if he doesn't get a majority, who gets the runoff, the top two?
The top two. So that is presumably Lindsey and whichever person makes it. Now, I'm not sure exactly what Cash's ground game is. I know Bill Connor has his website up. I think it's BillConnor.com, and he's looking for help. BrightForSenate.com is my guy's website. He has phone banking. So if you're not in the state, you can still help us reach last-minute voters by hitting the phone bank. It's real easy to do. You can do it from home. You just need a landline and a computer, and all the information to do that is on BrightForSenate.com. If you're in South Carolina, it takes 10 minutes to make a stencil. It takes $1 to get some spray paint, and it takes a couple of bucks to get a pack of poster board. You can make stencils, lose Lindsey, vote Bright, post them wherever, whenever. Talk to your families, friends. Get out, see if people need rides to the polling stations. We've got to hit this hard on Tuesday. We've got to keep Lindsey Graham under 50%. Because that's the only way we send Lindsey Graham home. It's been a good race with a crowded field. But if we get one of the conservatives one-on-one with Miss Lindsey, people will see the clear contrast. He will be hit hard, and he will go down. Not to give anybody any ideas.
Oh, man. Sorry, right, well, Rex, I interrupted
I'm
you.
I'm sorry for putting all those horrible images in your heads. I apologize about all that.
No,
Rex and I have horrible images all the time.
I appreciate you having me on, fellas, and y'all keep fighting the good fight, and we'll keep listening.
All right, buddy.
Sir, and good luck on Tuesday.
All right. God bless.
God bless you. All right.
God, we need more Americans.
Well, here's the thing, and this is why I like it when someone like Marshall calls in, okay? People are always saying, you know, well, what do we do? What do we do? And you're posting stories about Obama did this or he lifted weights like a girl or whatever. And look, I'm not saying don't do that. I just like to do stuff like that. It's fun to make fun of him. It's fun to just goof off and stuff. But have you set aside time to do the important things? And that's right there he just told you. Go to Lee Bright's website. You can make calls. You can convince people to go out and do it. Because a lot of people, I can tell you this. When I was making calls for Newt in the 2012, people were saying that, you know, well, why would I vote for Newt? Because he's out of the race. I'm going to go vote for Romney. Well, do you like Romney? No. Well, then why the hell are you voting for him? You see, people don't think things through because they're busy. They've got their kids in school. They got their business. They got their job to go to. They're stuck in traffic. They got to run their errands. They just turn on the Fox noise for 15 minutes and get told, go vote for this loser, and they do it. You have to be that voice that tells them why it's important to be different. And the fact is that this reported demise of the Tea Party and the Liberty movements is overblown media nonsense. All right? Mm-hmm. What it comes down to is if you believe that you're defeated, then you're going to act like you're defeated. So do something. Take a half hour, make some calls. If 10 people listen to the show, each get 10 other people listening to the show tonight, to make calls tomorrow for 30 minutes each, now you're starting to make an impact. Maybe you can, if you can't defeat Lindsey on Tuesday, all right, because it's a crowded field, maybe you can ensure that Lindsey Graham doesn't get the majority that he needs, and there's a runoff with the top two candidates. How great would that be?
He won't survive a runoff.
You know, and then people say, but we can't afford to give the seat to the Democrats. Let's be clear about something. The Democrats lost already, all right? The Obama administration has pushed things too far that even liberals like Chris Matthews are starting to give up on their blind support, okay? The Obamacare thing is going to be horrible every single day. It's going to get worse as people are getting their premium notices and losing their coverage. When the employer thing comes out, it's going to be a disaster. The Democrats are lost.
The problem is that the Republicans are using that to reelect the same losers they have now. This is the opportunity to put up some fresh blood. You have to be the one to do it. So get off your butt and do it. And why is this important? Because someone like Lindsey Graham doesn't care that the NSA is downloading all your data. Someone like Lindsey Graham supports his little girlfriend, Jade McCommitt, to blow up the rest of the world. Someone like Lindsey Graham thinks that the Federal Reserve is a good idea and that our current economic system of plunder overseas using our guns and plunder at home using fiat currency is a good thing. These are dangerous things. And, Chris, I'm going to throw it to you, and then we're going to shift gears. I've got a relatively long clip about finance, but it's very important because, that, like Chris said, the two things that the government is really tasked with in principle, the two things, is the integrity of the country, the national integrity, and defense, common defense, which is our foreign policy, and stable currency to create the conditions for the free market to operate. If they do those two things right and don't even do anything else, we will all be so much better off. But those are the two things that they screw up the most.
But
we're going to get in that clip
inspect,
right now.
Who will inspect the meat?
Are you there?
Yeah. You got anything you want to throw in there before we go to the clip?
Yeah, I do. I do. I really appreciate the guy coming on and talking. He's got the heart and soul of a true American. I just hope people wake up. I don't know. You know, I drive down the road and I look at people and they look like zombies. You know, unhealthy, afraid, timid, or angry, and. You know, they don't know what to do, so they dive into their Xbox or they dive into their freaking television shows or American Idol or sports or barbecue season or fishing, whatever it is, and nothing wrong with those things. It's just a question of are you being a citizen first? Because if you're not being a citizen of this country, which to me, the first thing is educating yourself, because there's nothing worse than people who don't have a clue what's going on getting out there and making a bunch of noise and influencing other people who are trying to learn something and they don't have a clue what they're talking about. I mean, that's frustrating to me. But, you know, you've got to take time to study and to learn. And it's like you talk about, you know, go to Mises and learn basic economics, you know, find the news sites that put out good information that would typically be the opposite of what you hear in U.S. media, you know, and start to educate yourself and learn, because when your eyes open up, now you can have a real conversation with people around you and you can influence people to quit being freaking sheep, because that's what we've become, is a nation of sheep. And it's sad and it breaks my heart, and we bitch and moan about it every week. You know, it seems to be an underlying theme. But it's, you know, wake the hell up. You will have the government you deserve. And there are people like the guy who just called in who are fighting hard to do the right thing and to save our dang country. And it's amazing to me how few people, I mean, I don't know what the turnout's going to be for midterms, you know, 37% again. Ooh, wow, that's an involved population. You know, people used to actually vote. You know, and they actually used to study the candidates, and they used to actually go get their friends and say, hey, we need to go vote. This is an important issue. This guy stands for what we believe. And we know what our friends and family and coworkers believe. And you build those coalitions around people, and you go to work. You know, he was a great example of that. And it's just, it's important. I mean, we do this radio show, God knows why, but we do. And it's an effort, it takes time, and we do a lot of background research, and you spend ungodly amount of time, you know, putting these clips together, which are incredible, and I hope everybody thanks you for it, because you don't get paid for it, and I don't get paid for it, and it's time and effort, but it's my country. You know, my son, I look at my son who did two tours in Iraq, and I think about, what am I handing him? You know, when I was his age, the sky was the limit. And now we're like hovering around waiting for, you know, the SWAT team to come or the market to crash again, you know, or to become a state of the new, you know, the new world order, whatever you want to call it, you know, the global order, the corporatist structure, the EU, whatever, you know, whatever your definition is. But, you know, that, I mean, it's, I've told him before, I'm saying, honestly, if something doesn't change, I cannot tell you what the future holds. And it's the first time in my life as an American citizen I've ever felt that way, ever felt that way. And here's the thing, and I want to tag this. It isn't Obama. He's just part of the problem. So get over it and quit worrying about Obama and look at the deeper issues that this country has folded into, because when Obama's gone and they put a Clinton in there or a Bush in there and you put Boehner and McConnell and Graham back in power positions and, you know, and Cantor and the rest of those guys, nothing will change except if the Republicans get in power. We'll have five more frickin' wars to fight. How do you like that? You know, that's what's coming down the pike. Or we're just going to lose the presidency again because of the dynamics of our voting system, you know, on the right, you know, on the Republican side, because these guys are a bunch of Democrat lights, you know, and they're okay with the status quo. It's got to change, but it ain't going to change in Washington. It's got to change with you first. And talking to 10 people and sit down, let's have a conversation about foreign policy, the economics. You're my friends, and I want to make sure your vote counts. It's probably do besides posting the frickin' news of the day on 100 websites. You know, that physical human interaction is what makes life work, not the damn internet.
And it's
the
also
internet
the opportunity
is control
you have.
Conjecture. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And Chris, you're right. I mean, if you get together with 10 people and talk about why this candidate is better vis-a-vis the Constitution, foreign policy, the Federal Reserve, and you each go out and get more people to join you, you're already starting to build the structure of your own local committee of safety. Because let's be clear about something. Either this whole thing is going to go off the rails, and it's going to be chaos in some parts, police state in another, you know, martial law in other parts. You're going to have to know each other, get along with each other, because no one's going to survive on their own. Or we're going to have a severe dollar crash, and then we're going to have to start picking the pieces up. And that is what's going to break the stranglehold of the consolidation of power. But then there's going to be a vacuum created by a broke federal government, and you're going to have to fill that vacuum yourself in your local community. But if you don't know anybody or who agrees with you or who understands the Constitution or help each other, then you won't be ready for it. So start doing that now. It's not just about voting. It's about knowing each other, knowing what you stand for, knowing how this system is supposed to operate with maximum local autonomy and freedom. And you got to teach people that, because for 50 years we haven't taught that. We have generations that don't even understand what these things are. And that's what we have to do. But we're running out of time because we've only got 40 minutes left. Here's how it works on Blog Talk Radio. At 11 p.m. Eastern Time, if you're listening in your browser live, you will be cut off. The only way you can finish the show live is to call in, listen on your handset, and the call-in number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. We'll probably go 20 minutes into overtime until about 11:20, and then there's an 18-minute closing clip, and you really should listen to clips. And, Chris, thanks for acknowledging the hard work I put in. But the thing is that Chris and I do this show, and we pay to do it rather than selling advertising to get paid to do it, because we want to bring you the analysis. We want to give you an opportunity to call in and express yourself like Marshall just did, let us know what's going on locally, because we can't follow every single race. And also so that we could put these clips together, because maybe you don't have time to watch MSLSD, Fox News, and Troll RT. We put these things together for you. Maybe you're not that interested in, say, finance. Well, get interested. Learn. Like Chris said, go to Mises.org, go to Acton.org, because you got to learn how these things work in order to prevent the politicians and the corporations that run them from plundering you. And that's what we're going to talk about now. Also, while you're on the Internet, make sure you go to our show page on Facebook. That's Liberty's Thunder on Facebook. Like the page, interact with the page so you get broadcast times, which are generally 9 p.m. Eastern on Sundays, and Chris's group, Liberty's Talk, if you want discussion and some articles from
various sources that are cross-referenced so that you can dig down deep into the truth instead of the fluff that you get fed by Fox News. Now, we're going to take a little time travel now. And this is important because this most recent, quote, financial crisis, which we are still in, by the way, no matter what they tell you about recovery, we're still in it, began in 07. And it was talked about by those who really understand economics, and they're telling us what's about to happen, but no one listens because they're always dismissed because they're not the mainstream propaganda for the corporations and the government. But I'm going to show you by going back to 2007 and listen to what Peter Schiff said, then recall what actually happened, and then listen to what he's saying now. It's about a quarter of an hour clip, but pay attention and make sure you tell other people to listen to this clip. It is very, very important to know this stuff. We'll be back on the other side. If you want to comment on it or you have something you want to share, 646-649-1013, and then we'll try to close out the show after we discuss this particular segment. But here it is. We're going to take a little time travel back to 2007.
Calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious shit.
Peter Schiff, if he's going to talk about a conspiracy in the government to keep inflation low, I want numbers. I want names, Schiff. Who's behind this greatest data conspiracy of all time?
I've never called it a conspiracy. It's just very convenient that the people who have the most to gain from a low inflation are the ones that are coming up with the numbers. But I want to talk a little bit about
that. Have you ever met these people? You don't even know that.
Yeah, I mean, I know these guys. I don't think they're capable
really
of a conspiracy.
Let me
get back to this,
Peter.
To the personal spending.
This is just the most ridiculous thing in the world.
Peter, you go ahead.
Well, let me talk about, you know, one of the major problems with our economy is that Americans have been spending too much money, and we've been borrowing it from abroad to do it. And what we're experiencing right now in the mortgage markets is evidence that we can't afford to pay it back. And as the people who are lending us all this money are losing their shirts, they're starting to rethink the wisdom of what they've been doing. And this credit well is about to run dry.
Hey, Peter, this is Ron Antana. The events that you are describing are inherently deflationary, not inflationary.
No, they're not. No, they're not. I mean, they're going to help bring down real estate prices and stock prices, but if you look at consumer prices, they're going to keep on rising, especially if you consider that Ben Bernanke is likely to try to come to the aid of a collapsing U.S. economy and a collapsing real estate market with still more inflation.
No, he's not. I mean, this whole idea of the statistics, I work hard for the National Association for Business Economics for the quality of government statistics.
So you're
and
part
granted,
of the conspiracy,
the
Diane.
I'm part of the conspiracy.
You're part of the
granted,
conspiracy.
Not, right, there you go.
Go
they're not the quality I'd like, but let's face it, the revisions that came out last week, do you even look at those? The benchmark revisions showed upward revisions to inflation historically, upward revisions to income, and upward revisions to the saving rate. I mean, across the board, mixed news from what you're talking about. If these guys had an incentive to
remember,
do it, then they were doing it in the wrong direction.
I never use the word conspiracy. You guys do that. All I've said is they've changed the way they calculate inflation. That's a fact.
Sure they have.
They don't. Right,
to
so
try
that's
to
why.
Better capture inflation. It's still not perfect, but to say that they're doing it in a way to systemically bias in one direction or the other is just ridiculous.
Yeah, the markets seem to be liking the numbers so far. We're still looking at triple-digit gains for the Dow. What do you make of these numbers?
Well, it's still early, but, you know, Rick said that no one's talking about the dollar. You know, I talk about it every time I come on this program.
I will give you that. You do.
Very few people listen to me. You know, this PCE number that we just got, that's one of the most disingenuous of the government's inflation numbers because they use substitution. So what they really do is measure the cost of survival, not the cost of living. And then to look at the core is even more ridiculous. But if anyone believes that inflation is only 2.5% annually, when you can see on the ticker there, oil is running at $77.50 a barrel, the dollar is collapsing to record lows. There's no way inflation is only 2.5%.
You know, Peter, wait
a minute.
I won't even argue with you that real inflation is not necessarily what we're seeing in these numbers. However, the Fed takes a look at these things and has a big part of their decision on whether or not what they're going to do with rates comes out of that. Doesn't that have a huge impact? Isn't it something
right, but it
we
doesn't
need to
matter what the Fed thinks. What matters is reality. I don't care if the Fed thinks there's no inflation or I don't know what they think. I know what they're saying, but I know they have an agenda, and their agenda is to paint a very rosy picture.
We were short all those triple B minus tranches and made a lot of money. They were being mispriced for a while. What's
for a while, but you're arguing permanently.
No, what's happening is the reason that bonds are so low is because foreign governments governments, principally in Asia, have been buying all these bonds, and they're doing it for political reasons, not economic reasons. If you want to look at what independent people are doing around the world, they have been shunning U.S. bonds. It's governments who are doing it basically at gunpoint for political reasons. And interest rates are much too low, and they're going to go a lot higher. You know, bond prices are going to collapse, just like real estate prices.
This repricing
of
risk,
though, is very important because we found out that a lot of people... Right, but a lot of people were mispricing the risk in all these mortgage-backed securities and CDOs and subprime debt. And similarly, people are mispricing the risk in U.S. Treasuries. There's a lot more risk out there.
And just to give you an indication as to how some Dow components are trading this morning, we have GE, of course, the parent company of CNBC, trading down $1.30 right now at $17.50 a share. Of course, it's lower open expected, and we are expected to go lower right now off the 252-point decline that we have. Of course, coming into it, we had a global sell-off. We had Japanese stocks down 9%, the Hong Kong markets down 8%, Singapore was down 8%, and of course, the sell-off that we are seeing in Europe today, most of those markets down about 8 or 9% as well. The concerns continue to be the deleveraging that we are seeing around the world by hedge funds and other investors, the recessionary fears that were brought to the fore today by the fact that the UK, its economy contracted for the first time in 16 years in the third quarter. Add to that the news that we're getting out of not only corporate America, but corporations around the world.
Traders here working the phone say a lot of their customers are freaked out waiting to see how low the Dow will go. They're focused on the Dow, not so focused on OPEC. Yes, OPEC did cut production by 1.5 million barrels per day, but it wasn't up to stem the slide. The slide is due today to what we're seeing in the global equities market, and that's what these traders are focused on. They're looking at the slide in stocks around the globe, and oil is falling as well. But I must note that since the Dow has opened, we are not on the lows of the session. Oil had actually fallen below $63 a barrel. We are off of those lows, but still down $4.40 here at the NYMEX. A lot of folks in the developed countries are saying that OPEC cut should never have happened. The International Energy Agency is saying that it's going to do more harm than good to the world economy. Rick Santelli, over to you in Chicago.
Thank you, Sharon. You know, a lot of traders down here are actually amazed and impressed that the markets didn't do actually worse. Things like a 30-year bond, which had some very strange anomalies yesterday in the 30-year swaps, was a prescient indicator. 30-year yields, for many reasons, are now at the lowest level, or were at the lowest level they've ever been at.
Stronger than expected jobs report. 217,000 jobs added, the unemployment rate holding at 6.3%. But don't get comfortable, says Peter Schiff, the CEO and Chief Global Strategist for Euro-Pacific Capital. Peter, good to have you with us. And you remain, despite all of the glories on Wall Street and in the stock market, you remain, well, let's say negative in outlook. Is that correct?
Well, sure. The stock market is a function of the quantitative easing of all the cheap money. But that same cheap money is really making it impossible for the U.S. economy to create the kind of jobs, quality jobs, that most Americans need. You know, we have regained numerically the jobs that were lost since the beginning of the Great Recession, but they're not the same jobs. The jobs that we're creating pay a lot less than the jobs that were destroyed. In fact, many of them are part-time jobs. And so not only are Americans earning less with their new jobs, but consumer prices have gone up quite a bit since 2007. So for most people, even if they have jobs, they're seeing a big decline in their standard of living.
A big decline in standard of living. There has been some, I think it's fair to say, bifurcation on unemployment, on wealth in this country that is certainly troubling to all of us who want to see growth, prosperity return to our middle class and to the economy at large. What's going to be required, in your judgment, to restore that prosperity, job creation, wealth creation, and prosperity itself?
Well, the free market is the only way to restore that, and the government has to get out of the way and let it work. Unfortunately, they won't allow that. They're too concerned about propping up banks or propping up the stock market or the real estate market. They're interfering with a legitimate recovery. Meanwhile, look at our labor force. There's almost 13 million people now not in the labor force relative to the beginning of the recession. The labor force participation rate at 62.8 right. is the lowest it's been in more than 35 years.
Right.
So we have this huge group of unemployed Americans that have permanently left the labor force. We've barely created enough low-paying jobs just to accommodate the increase in population.
You know, and I think startling to all of us is that there are 7 million fewer Americans working today than when President Obama took office. Now, this is not a reconciled or corrected imbalance in our economy at all.
And, you know, Lou, a lot of people try to say, well, it's because of the retiring baby boom. But that's not where the jobs are being lost. In fact, a lot of older people are holding on to their jobs because they can't afford to retire. In fact, many retirees are back in the workforce even though they don't want to be there. It's the young people that can't get jobs, and a lot of them are so loaded up with college debt and they majored in nothing. They don't have any real skills. They've moved back in with their parents.
Very quickly, your outlook for this economy this year, these markets, in 30 seconds if you can.
Well, I think the economy continues to deteriorate, you know, beneath the surface. You have the superficial rise in the stock market. But I think this whole thing is headed to a dollar crisis. We're going to print so much money to try to keep this phony economy going, destroy the dollar, and we're going to have a real crisis. But only after that real crisis do we have any hope of correcting the problems. But it's not going to come from the government. Again, the government has to get out of the way. This economy needs to restructure. We need to have savings. We need to have investment. We can't keep borrowing, spending, and printing money because that's a recipe for disaster, not economic growth.
Peter Schiff, not often that we agree. I happen to agree with those recommendations.
But we were still hurting.
Entirely.
Back then, too, we still had something called a gold standard. We still had currency that was pegged to the price of gold. Richard Nixon, some decades later, removed that. Steve Forbes says that was the beginning of our undoing. Steve, the author of so many great books, author of this latest one now called Money. It does make you think. The Forbes name just automatically connects with money. But anyway, Steve, good to see you.
Good to see you, Neil. Thank
so
you.
So for a lot of people who are new with this and thick skulls like my own, you say that we need to get back to pegging our currency to gold. Why?
Because currency to work is like having 60 minutes in an hour, 12 inches in a foot. It should be fixed in value. So when you make an exchange, you do a trade, you buy and sell, you know what each of you are getting. If you're investing in the future, you got to know you're going to get, if you make a good investment, you get back 100 cents on the dollar. If you don't know whether you're going to get 100 cents, 10 cents, 30 cents, you get less investment in the future. And when you mentioned Richard Nixon took us off in 1971, if we'd maintained the growth rates that we'd had for the previous 180 years, which include boom times, depressions, and everything else, in the last 40 years, our economy today would be 50% larger.
Now, there are many people who quibble with you on that, and they say that the danger of pegging yourself to anything, let's say gold, is it's volatile, its price is volatile, you can't take away the volatility, and someone could corner the market on it, and your favorite peg becomes a nightmare. You say?
Gold keeps its intrinsic value better than anything else on Earth. Not perfect, but better than anything.
Why do you like gold so much?
Because it works. Because it keeps a stable value. The gold doesn't change in value. What you see in that price fluctuation is perceptions by the market day to day on the value of the dollar, or fears or hopes about the dollar. So that's where you get the fluctuation.
But gold does what it did in the days prior. It fluctuated. Are you saying not as wildly?
No, and the gold standard fluctuated hardly at all unless you were starting to print too many dollars. And that's the virtue of gold. It tells you you're starting to print too many dollars. Pull
so
back.
That is a back, sort of like a backup backbone for us not to go crazy.
Absolutely. And
Steve Forbes doesn't like everything the Federal Reserve has done either to prop up these markets, to send us near these record terms. I mean, we're now at another record on the Dow. And they say that's precisely because of all this easy money, and Steve Forbes shouldn't be whining.
Well, we wouldn't have had the housing boom and bust. We wouldn't have had the terrible 1970s. We'd have an economy much bigger, 50% bigger today. So if a baseball player
We'd still have recessions, though, right?
Oh, sure.
So how does that mitigate that?
It makes sure that you have an environment where you can quickly come back instead of having the sluggishness where 6 years in the sixth year of a recovery, we finally get back to the job count we had before this crisis began. So it doesn't take out fluctuations in life, but what it makes sure is over time you grow more. because this government, the Federal Reserve especially, as explained in the book, has hurt this recovery. We should have been doing much better.
Now, do you think it's going to get worse? So in other words, some of the problems we've had post the meltdown will revisit these markets notwithstanding. Easy money is
yeah, we'll have a good run for the next year and a half because of QE they're tapering off on, but because they don't know what they're doing, like the doctors in days of old, they'd always bleed the patient, we're going to have another crisis.
But our dollar is still doing okay.
Doing okay compared to what they were doing before. But
you think it's a matter of time?
Matter of time. 2001, you could buy a gallon of gas for $1. That kept the dollar stable. Wouldn't that be nice today to have $1 a gallon?
You're assuming that pegging to gold will keep it stable.
Oh, it always works. 4,000 years. I'll trust that 4,000 years more than I do these guys.
And George Soros
couldn't
corner this market.
George Soros have to find another line of work.
Wow. Maybe that alone might make it interesting.
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious shit.
All right, that was our little time travel back to 2007. And you heard Peter Schiff warning about the coming collapse, and they mocked him. And this is allegedly the financial press. And then we went forward to 2008, and you heard them panicking about what was going on. And then we wrapped it up with Peter Schiff telling us what is going on right now, and then also Steve Forbes. Now, you might not have followed this stuff. It's not the Bergdahl thing. It's not the Benghazi thing. It's not American Idol. It's not right there in your face 24/7, but it's out there if you look for it, and that's why we bring it to you. One thing that Peter said, that the economy will continue to deteriorate beneath the surface. And we're talking about icebergs, darling. Most of it, a mess, is beneath the surface. You don't see it. You may not even understand it, but it's going to happen. And you better get familiar with what's going on, because the crash is coming, period. The crash is coming. Now, there are those who want to use it to their advantage and push us further into a command economy scheme on a global scale. And it is also an opportunity for us to right the ship and go back to the ordered free market that we had before. Well, that was when we were in a agrarian culture, and it was a difference. Just to get with the times, Rex. Well, the principles of economics don't change. The practical application does, but no single person, no single bureaucracy, no single central bank can possibly do all the calculations of a planet of 7 billion people engaged in exchange. It is always best done between the parties involved in the exchange at the local level. It allows for the most creativity. What you need is stable conditions in order to transmit that creative human activity across an economy, and that's what we are lacking, and that's why we are where we are. Just to give you a couple of examples, if we go back to 2000, when W was elected, you were just under, or just about $1.50 a gallon for gas. Today, national average is somewhere around $3, a little north of $3. Okay, that is an expense that's hitting you when you pump. It is hitting you in the cost of everything else you have, because we transport our goods around this country, and everything has a cost. Have you noticed if you order a pizza now, there's a $1.50 charge. If you get a package, FedEx and UPS are assessing you a gasoline surcharge. It's affecting the cost of everything. We run on energy. Now, we need to get off oil and go biofuel. You know what? The market will always find you the most efficient energy sources if you permit it. If you have corporations that sell certain things controlling it, that'll never, ever happen. Now, if you think that prices have gone up, that's probably something you've noticed when you go to the store. But have you noticed by how much? How much? Meat, fish, poultry, eggs? You've had a 21% increase in price in the last 5 years. With the food in general, it's up 10% in the last 5 years. You know, this is crazy, okay? It is. We talked about it last week on Buy America, what happened to the Weimar Republic. We're heading towards that kind of a scenario. And the only way to stop it, the only way to stop it is to stop printing money. But they won't, and they cannot do that. It is their control mechanism. Congress likes to spend it because that's how they get reelected. You have a loser like Lindsey Graham this Tuesday. He's even courting Democrat voters, according to Marshall Culpepper. And I saw the advertisement Lindsey had. This is an open primary. Please come out and vote for Lindsey Graham. And the reason he's afraid is because he can lose if you put the pressure on. Okay? That's what has to happen. But Congress likes to have the Federal Reserve because it gives them money to spend and to buy political clout. The bankers like it because they're the ones wicking away wealth away from you. You heard Steve Forbes explain it there. You can do that. You can inflate with gold. You can have recessions with gold. But it's much more difficult to do than with digital or paper currency. And that's what we're talking about. And you have to understand this stuff if you're going to do something about it. Like Peter Schiff said, the answer is not coming from the government. That means it's going to come from the market when the government can't control it anymore. Generally, when that happens, it's a chaotic, unpleasant, and dangerous situation. We can prevent that from happening if we get people in place who understand these mechanisms. Someone like Rand Paul, someone like Trey Gowdy, who's investigating things and getting to the bottom of things. This is the kind of person that you need assigned the temporary power of legislating and executing law. Chris, what did you think of our little time travel trip there?
I loved it, but I love this topic. And you know why I love this topic? Because it's the most important topic out there. If the economy continues to go the direction it's going and the people that you and I follow, and those were only a couple of them, we follow much more than that. In fact, the clip from last week had four guys on there, and we follow more than that. And these are sane people who understand economics. There's an important point here. And this is another thing about the gold standard, not to get too deep into the gold standard and that, but Steve Forbes, you know, defended his position very well. Our government, when Nixon, you can go get the charts. The charts are out there. Inflation, income, cost of living, you know, all the charts are there. When Nixon took us off the gold standard, everything went right through the ceiling. My dad, and I've said this before on the show, when I was in grade school, made $5,800 a year as a college professor. And we had a two-story house on a mountain with a view that spread, I don't know, 300, 400 miles, two cars, a trailer, a boat, you know, took the summers off, and my mom didn't have to work. $5,800 a year. And you go, well, yeah, but, you know, that just inflation's a natural thing. You know, no, it's not a natural thing. It's a manipulated thing. It's a planned thing. It is organized theft. It is a tax. That's really what it is. And here's the thing that the socialists will never get, or the liberals, and very few Republicans want to really understand. And you said it so well with fuel costs. When something rises in the market that's a base product like fuel, it's in everything. You know, oil is in products. It's in our cars. You know, it's totally intertwined in our society. You know, it's even prescription drugs. So when you have something like that and it goes up in cost, okay, or, you know, they are not going to lose money. They're going to jack their prices up. People bitch and moan, and politicians run with it for a while and try to get elected off the other side and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is everything goes up across the road, you know, because they are not going to pay for it, for the increased cost. And this is what people don't understand. So when you talk about, you know, food has gone up, you know, I saw that, I don't know, I talked about it 6 months ago, you know, just going into the lumber store and looking at basic costs, and I saw it right there. You know, because when you're a contractor, you're bidding everything out. You're very, you know, I'm inside a lumber supply store like my wife is in the grocery store. You know, she sees an instant change in prices. And the other thing, too, is for those companies who are afraid to raise the price, they shrink the package. Have you bought Top Ramen lately or ice cream bars? They're smaller, you know? And so, yeah, I pay the same price, but you get 30% less. Say, duh, that's inflation. Inflation is a tax. The Fed prints money out of thin air. They then lend it to a handful of banks at a small percentage who then and then they buy the government bonds. I mean, it's the biggest game. There was actually, remember that website I posted a bunch of their videos where a guy had really gone in depth and produced some real high def, really quality videos explaining it with, you know, moving graphs and, you know, and
yep.
things like that. That was an awesome, and not just to beginners. I mean, everybody should look at that stuff once in a while to remind themselves the hell that you're living in. Because it all started in 1913, and then Nixon drove the stake through America's heart in 1971, and it's been highway from hell ever since then, you know. And I remember when women could work or not work, you know. And now if you don't have three jobs, you ain't paying the damn bills in a household. I mean, it is the stress that's on people's lives, the restrictions. Then you have regulations, environmental regulations, all the EPA, APA, you know, IRA, blah, 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 all these different ABC on top, organizations on top of it. Try starting a business today and then go back to like 1980 and see what it took to start a business. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. We have priced ourselves out of the market. Now, here's the big problem. In not only are we in trouble, but the world is moving away from the dollar. Now, there's two reasons that the U.S. has been able to spend like drunken whores, in politicians I'm talking about, okay, is the fact that they can print money and they can push it off on future generations, and inflation is the hidden tax to pay for that. Then they have outrageous budgets to centralize power in Washington, D.C., and corruption up the gazoo, okay? Then the other reason they can do it is the world has been pegged to the U.S. petrodollar, and the number one trade dollar in the world has been the U.S. dollar. That means a company, let's say I was a Chrysler Corporation, but I had a factory in, I don't know, let's say Ford. They have a factory in Russia. But then they've got to buy parts from another country. What would normally happen is they would trade the U.S. dollar and then trade to Germany for those parts they were importing or wherever the other country was, and then back. Well, then they would pay wages. Well, you had U.S. people there, so you would pay them in dollars, and then you had to convert from ruble to dollar and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And the same thing with oil. You would say to Saudi, who was our main structural point for the U.S. petrodollar, and it was a big deal that was cut back when Nixon screwed the country with Saudi, and they made it through the OPEC and the rest of them so that if Russia or China or somebody else, well, Russia doesn't have to buy oil, but another country, China, needs to buy oil, they would convert to U.S. and buy the oil and then bring it in their country, and then they'd have to convert back. And so there was always this profitable exchange, even though it can be micro points. When you start dealing with trillions and trillions of dollars of trade, or $100 trillion of the whole world, it makes a lot of money. Well, that adds to the pile back in Washington, D.C., where all the whores hang out, and they can use that to prop up this fake economy. Now, when you have Russia and China and India and Brazil and Iran and even Saudi now trading outside the U.S. dollar and starting to negotiate between, and the EU is big. They've grown a lot through the years, the euro. So all these countries are moving away from the dollar. And I said this in the last show, and I still haven't found the person who said it. I want to say Schiff, but it might have been Rickards, said in 2008 or 7-8 when it crashed, the world moved to the safe haven of the U.S. dollar. But after looking at the U.S., the Fed printing nonstop, $5 trillion balance sheet, they have nowhere to go, zero interest rates, they can't go any lower, the government at a $3.6 trillion economy, up a trillion from Bush, who's up a trillion from the guy before him, you know, to a point where the whole damn country's tied to the federal government. If you stopped and corrected the budget tomorrow, you'd have a mess because so many people are dependent on that money. And all that stuff, when they've looked, our tax increases, unwillingness to, you know, deal with our corruption and everything else, countries have been moving away from the U.S. dollar, both in the trade environment And in the petrol environment, that new deal with Russia and China, which is just the tip of the iceberg, there was 50 contracts signed. All that will be done between Russia, yuan, and the ruble. It's the same thing across the board. Everybody's moving away from the dollar, so when the next crash happens, they will exit the dollar as fast as humanly possible. China doesn't buy our debt anymore. It's been quietly selling it off. Russia's been selling our debt off. Because who owns our debt? Countries and, you know, all over the world. You know, and the Fed, they just don't have enough room to buy it all back. I mean, if China sold off, you know, the $1.3 trillion they had, dumped it tomorrow, and short-sold the $3 trillion in trade deficit money they had tomorrow, what the hell would the U.S. do? We'd be in trouble. And we'd be in serious
trouble.
We'd be in the Stone Age. So this is gradually happening, but when the next correction, and I'm being polite when I say that, not to scare anybody, the next correction happens, crash, everybody's going to exit the dollar. The U.S. trade dollar and the U.S. petrodollar will be gone. Now, will that destroy America? No, but it'll change a lot of things. Because
well,
all of a sudden that $3.6 trillion budget ain't going to happen no more, period, in the report. Go ahead.
Well, the whole idea is that it's all interlinked. The dollar is interlinked in all transactions. Now, the Chinese and the Russians and others are trying to move away, but if push comes to shove, the masters of the Federal Reserve will kill the dollar to cause global havoc, which only creates a panic situation where people will clamor for whatever solution they offer, which is probably the SDRs, the special drawing rights, which starts the scheme all over again on a different scale. And speaking of limitations in inflation, we've inflated time so that in less than 90 seconds, we're going to be cut off in your browser. So for all of you who are listening live right now in your browser, if you want to hear the rest of the show or try to wrap up in the next 15 minutes, you have to call in and listen on your handset, 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. And Chris and I are going to try to wrap up in the next 15 minutes, and then we're closing with a fairly lengthy clip, but it's got a little bit of Reagan talking on D-Day when he was president, a little bit of Rand Paul on foreign policy. These are important points because we're talking about economics right now, but just understand something. Just as the welfare warfare state are flip sides of the same tyranny, your financial economic structure at home also dictates your foreign policy and vice versa. So we have a neocon aggressive foreign policy because we have a deteriorating fiat paper money scheme at home. If you want to end the welfare warfare state, you got to get off welfare and have a true free market where people can be prosperous, and you have to get off invading and interfering all over the world and have a proper defensive constitutional foreign policy. Chris, I'm going to throw it to you to continue with the economic discussion, but like I said, we got to wrap up in 15 minutes, so 5 minutes from now we will go to closing thoughts and then play the final clip. Call in if you want to listen, 646-649-1013. Thank you.
No, I think we covered it. I mean, it is an important topic because people don't understand it. Their eyes glaze over. They don't think it can happen here. You know, and you know, guys like, you know, I mean, you're way beyond me in terms of this stuff. You've been studying a lot longer than I have. But I really, in the last few years of my life, have been really sitting down and going, something's broken. Every time I do really well in life, you know, a crash happens and I lose a bunch of money and then I'm starting over. And, you know, and after a while you start going, well, this is not what they told me it's supposed to be. And I started listening and searching for answers. You know, I remember a standard investment banker guy or investment guy, one of the name brand companies. I was in this group, this business group one time, and I had been studying some of these other people talking about this upcoming housing bubble that was going to pop, and so I was aware of it, and being a contractor, all that kind of crap. So, you know, and I was watching them build houses faster, you know, faster than hell. And it was just like, I've been in this before. I was in this in Alaska. I remember when it happened in Seattle. You know, I remember it. I remember losing everything I owned and being hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt in Alaska in my 20s and having to start over. And I was just like going, God, you know, I got to figure this stuff out. Well, the thing is most, I've been to classes, I've read books. Most people are singing the same crap that the people who are arguing with Shift are singing. And that's what's important, I think, an important point to make. I remember asking this guy, well, what about this bubble? You know, this housing market bubble is going to crash. How's that going to impact the stock market? And a bunch of about five guys around me were arguing with me. And I just read a book from a guy who was a financial forecaster who had predicted the last crash, you know, kind of like shift. It wasn't shift, but it was, you know, like the shift situation. And they were beating me up and trying to make me feel bad because I had a slightly doomsday attitude. And I'm going, something's coming down the road. Everybody's buying and selling houses like they're junk bond. You know, developers are putting in 400, 500, 600, you know, person developers. And it's like, well, there ain't that many new people being born every day. And, you know, and you're like, common sense is telling you something's broken. And the stock market was riding high, and housing and development, people build malls and mini malls, and, you know, they couldn't mow trees down fast enough. And having experienced it before, not necessarily being intellectually understanding it, but just common sense life, enough life under my belt to look at this going, this is not going to end well. And I started searching, and then bam, the market crashes, and here we are again. And all these yahoos have done, including your hero, not yours, but, you know, the liberals' hero, you know, the Mr. Hope and Change, have done is build bigger bubbles than we had in 2007, bigger housing bubble, bigger stock bubble. They've been printing and infusing money into the market while our neocon policy is pissing off the world, and this time not just third world nations that we can blow up in a couple weeks, but big countries with real economies and real militaries. And so we've got this antagonizing mindset going on around the world, and we have this internal lie that everybody is preaching. You heard Varney. I don't always agree with you, Schiff. Like, oh, great, Varney, that you just told us you're an idiot, because Schiff predicted the last two crashes. So he might be a guy you want to talk to, and he not only is he gold and silver, blah blah blah, but he's also an investment guy, and he knows his stuff, and he's all over the world, and he's got a pretty good sized firm, and the guy's been spot on in the last two crashes, and just because you got a show on Fox News, you're going to go, well, you know, I'm a pretty smart guy myself, and I don't always agree with you because I got a camera pointed at me, you know, and I'm thinking, will people ever learn to stop and go, you know what, that's the same batch of bastards that lied to me last time, i.e. 2012 primary, the full of neocons. If you look at all their, I mean, 80% of the people in Fox are a bunch of neocons that are, you know, are pissed that we don't have three more wars going on. You know, if those are the jerks that lied to me before, maybe I need to find some new sources and do some research and learn some new things and quit listening to these talking heads and realize that it's not just on the left. And that's you know, I mean, that's really the core of our conversation. You could talk about liberals all day long and go, whatever, you know, I mean, you know, give me half hour and I'll cover the whole thing. But that's not my problem. My problem are the crooks and the rhinos and the neocons, which are really neoliberals, you know, this globalist world order mindset that have infiltrated the Republican Party. And if you don't get some help in there for people like Rand and Cruz and Amash and the rest of those guys who have stirred up a hornet's nest, then be ready for 2016, Hillary or Bush and three more wars and another crash. It's really that simple. I don't know how to explain it any better than that. Up to you.
Over yeah. To you. No, it's up to me. It's up to me and it's back to me. Look, here's the thing about the finance aspect of it. It's not a segment. You know, it's not like, you know, the four food groups, right? You don't have, you know, grains and vegetables and meats and dairy, and they're all separate and you just pick and choose. Finance affects everything because you use it to buy your food, send your kids to school, put housing over their head, you know, get clothes on your back, transportation. It's how you support your, you know, church or synagogue or religious institution. It's all of it. It affects everything. So if it's messed up, if it is being manipulated, then it is affecting everything. And the way that this works, just think of it this way. You got 60 minutes in an hour. All right, we just burned 120 minutes doing this show. If there were 120 minutes in an hour, would this show be any longer or shorter? No, it would still take the same amount of time, except that instead of being a 240-minute show, it would be a 480-minute show, right? Which means that each minute is now worth half as much as it was before, right? That doesn't change the nature of the thing. It only changes the units. Same with a ruler, right? You got 12 inches in a ruler. You can put 18 inches in a ruler if it's still measuring the same distance. All you've done is made each inch worth less. It's still called an inch, but it's worth less. That's what they do with your dollar. They print more, and when you have more quantity without a commensurate increase in the wealth, okay, then what you have is each dollar unit being worth less, which means everything you use that you buy dollars with now costs as much more. See, we see the effects of inflation, but we don't look at the root of the inflation. All right, it's like that iceberg again, right? You see the tip of the iceberg, you don't see what's below the water. So you see that, oh, my coffee used to cost me $6, and now it costs me $10. There's been a $4 price increase in coffee. The store's ripping me off. The coffee manufacturer's ripping me off. Well, that might have something to do with crops or distribution or what have you, but for the most part, the price changes is because the dollar is worth less. And as Forbes said there, the price of gold hasn't changed. The question, oh, what's the price of gold today? It's a silly question. Gold is the price. What you're asking for is what's the relationship of dollars to gold today? An ounce of gold is still an ounce of gold. The reason it costs $1,100 to buy the ounce of gold is because they printed so many dollars. And that's where you have the problem. If you were actually going to measure all of your goods and services in gold ounces, you would realize how much you are being ripped off by the Federal Reserve. And what happens? What do you do about it? Well, you got to inform yourself and get others informed. And then you got to do things like make your calls. Poor Rand Paul's audit the Fed bill. Make sure you listen when he's speaking and let other people know. Put pressure on the rest of the congressional fools. Get rid of shitbags like Lindsey Graham and get people in there to understand this. And put pressure on them, too, to audit the Federal Reserve. Because if you audit it, you'll find out what a ripoff it is, and that'll create the political momentum to get rid of it. It's gone one way or another. So that's the thing people understand. Oh, what are you going to replace it with? It doesn't really matter at this point. It's gone one way or another. Look back at its history. Comes online in 1913. By 1933, we're broke. FDR confiscates your gold. By 1971, we're off the international gold standard. Here you are 40-some years later, and you're at the tail end of the next phase. Bretton Woods system failed. The petrodollar's failing. So it's coming to an end. What comes next is going to be better for you if you lay the groundwork now. It's going to be worse for you if it happens after in a panic chaos situation. We would already have hit the berg. We'd be going down, and anybody that is willing to save you from drowning, you will listen to. We talked about it last week on Weimarica. That's how the Nazis rose to power in Weimar Germany. So if you don't want that kind of a situation, you have to lay the groundwork. Now, you have some people doing it. You have some states that are making gold and silver legal tender in their states. So you need competing currencies, like even Bitcoin. I'm not a huge fan, but the idea is that competing currencies in competition, just like we talked about the Lindsey Graham race, gives you more options and more opportunities, and people can learn from mistakes and repeat the successes, and you get better and better and better. All something like the Federal Reserve does is perpetuate the mistakes, paper them over, and make things worse. So get to know it. Take action on it. Campaign for Liberty is a very good source for taking action on exposing the Federal Reserve and taking legislative action. This is Congress's responsibility. They won't do it because they're addicted to the free money. We're running out of time, Chris, so let's go to final thoughts.
Command economy, controlled, and the people at the top keep collecting more and more and more of the wealth of the country, and the people in the middle and the bottom and even the upper middle end just keep working harder and harder and harder, and then you get jerks in there telling you that people need to pay more and they need to pay their fair share. People at the top never pay their fair share. the wealth distribution under Obama is accelerated to hyperspeed. The people at the top, they never, I mean, you look at the last crash, not this one, but the last one, there was thousands of indictments for, you know, bankers and investors and things like that. Under Obama, how many guys have gone to jail? In fact, they just bailed out all the banks that put us through this hell. And really, the hell has never stopped. You know, we had our crash, and then they started printing money, and then Obama started expanding the government, and nothing's changed. And it's just like what Schiff says, that the undercurrent of the economy hasn't recovered, and it hasn't. But the wealth distribution in terms, I mean, we got the stock market. Everybody's bragging about the stock market every day. And if you listen to the right people, you realize who's buying the stocks. And a lot of these companies are just borrowing this cheap money and buying their own stocks back again and again and again, selling and buying it. They're just playing Monopoly while you go down and go, well, why is milk so expensive? You know, and they're just increasing their wealth, all under this socialist president who claimed that he was going to make everything fair and equal across the board. Yeah, like we didn't see that one coming, did we? So, you know, here we are, and like I say, it is the most important conversation. And hopefully we simplify it enough so that people can say, hey, I can learn that. Hey, I've heard that 5 times now or 30 times on your shows, and I'm starting to get it. And if you go to, you know, the Liberty's Talk, I have a financial thread that where we post all the good articles, all the good, you know, vids and anything we talk about. You know, we don't hold this stuff back. We don't have this ego that says, you know, I got to be the owner of this knowledge and so everybody's in awe of me. I really don't want to do this. This is not my forte in life. You know, I'm just fighting for my country. You know, that stuff we put on that group is for you. It ain't for me. You know, I mean, I'll post stuff on the, you know, what's going on in Europe or South America or Africa, and, you know, and then, you know, we'll get caught up in the news of the day for a week, and I'll come back and go, I've been talking to myself again, going, I don't get it. Why don't people want to learn about the things that are going to define the future of this country in about a year? And I'm probably being lenient when I say a year. I mean, it's serious stuff coming, and you need to educate yourself. Quit hiding your head in the sand. It's so overwhelming. You ain't seen nothing yet. Stick around. You know, overwhelming is when gas is $10 a gallon and your income hasn't changed. That's overwhelming. You know, we got $1.4 trillion of student loan debt, and we've already got 28% of them are defaulting on it because there ain't no damn jobs, regardless of what the government statistics are, because they don't include the people. It's like Schiff said in that first article, they play with the numbers. They falsify things. They take out a number out of the inflation factor so that it's not part of it, when in reality it is part of it. And it's the same thing with jobs. They only count the people who are actively looking for jobs or on unemployment, and they can tell you, oh, we're at 6.25%. Wow, isn't that great? Well, yeah, but what about the other 12% that haven't found a job in 3 years and have lost their house? And the tens of millions of people that are in that condition, nobody talks about that, including Fox News. That's what pisses me off, because here's the important thing. Obama and the Dems won the House, the Senate, and the White House on failed wars and bad economy. We have failed wars and bad economy under this president, and not a peep out of the Republicans. Not a freaking peep. Couple of them, and that's it. So the question is, are they scared? Are they bought off? Are they so embedded in it that they just hope they can win it back, so when they win it back, they can manage the failure a little better? I don't know. I have no idea what's wrong with them, but the same dynamics going on right now happened and handed the Democrats control of all three houses and lost, you know, across the nation. And here we are with worse dynamics and not a peep out of Fox or the Republican leadership. This is a whole dynamic you could run on politically, especially in 2014. And so that means that, like I said before, either they're afraid or they're part of the problem and they have no intention of fixing it when they get power. And that's something, that's a big wow. I better think about that one. So that's my closing thoughts. Wake the hell up and learn something. And then you will be inspired to do something. You know, because it is tough to get up there and run down the road, you know, and battle a battle when you don't understand how to hold the weapon. You know, you do need to educate yourself. And hopefully we're doing that for you. I'm done.
Yeah. I think that's a very extremely important point. And, I mean, and the thing is, you know, we don't have a monopoly on this information. We didn't invent this stuff. I mean, you know, I don't know Peter Schiff. We play him on the show because he knows what he's talking about. I understand what he's talking about. I've been reading his stuff and then listening to his stuff for years. But maybe you haven't heard it. Maybe you didn't know that Forbes was interviewed by Nick Cavuto. I don't know if that was on the Fox Noise or on the Fox Business, whatever. Maybe this just doesn't even interest you. But you have to be interested in it. And the information is available to you. Mises.org, ACTA.org, go to Liberty's Thunder on Facebook or Liberty's Talk on Facebook, and you can get that information. Ask us a question. There are sources out there and people that have been screaming from the rooftops for decades, but people are more ready to pay attention now. A lot of people were screaming like from the rooftops, no one was listening or calling them crazy. You saw what they did to Peter Schiff in that clip that we played in 2007. They still do it to him today, but more and more Americans are starting to realize that this game is rigged and that voting simply for the other team is not the answer. You know, what's the number one amendment people want to see at the Article 5 convention? Term limits. Okay. You know, I don't buy it. You have term limits now. The House is up every 2 years. A third of the Senate is up every 2 years. And yet America keeps electing 95% of the same pricks. Yes, the voting machines are rigged. Get rid of the voting machines. That is a state issue. Get rid of the voting machines. Paper write-in ballots. That's what you have to go back to. But remember, they can only rig elections when they're close. If it is an overwhelming victory for a candidate who happens to have principles and follows the Constitution, they can't fake it. It would be too obvious of a lie. When it's close, when you got suppressed turnout, when you got 37% of registered people turning out and only 20% of the country's registered, then you're going to have an easy time selecting your candidate, right? But if it happens like what happened in Reagan's race in 1980, they can't fake it. But you see, not enough people are active because they've either given up or they've thrown their, you know, because they don't want to participate. They're ignorant. They don't care. They just want free stuff. They're diehard Republicans or diehard Democrats. They vote party line every time either way. Or you've given, you know, the New World Order has taken over, it's already in place, and so why bother? I mean, come on. You can make it happen if you get people excited about it and get them in there, because even if it falls apart, you are responsible for what you did to prevent it. The outcome isn't up to you, but together, all of us working, the outcome can be changed. Now, we're talking about iceberg, darling, and the Bergdahl story is important. Just as the Benghazi story is important, just as the Bundy Ranch thing was important, just as the VA scandals were important, just as the IRS scandals were important, just as Fast and Furious was important. All of these things are important, but they all point to one thing, Obama. But like Chris says, Obama's not the problem. The imperial presidency, built by both parties, built by the corporations, built by the banks, built by power-hungry politicians, is the problem. This is not the presidency we're supposed to have. This is not the Congress we're supposed to have. This is not the structure that we're supposed to have. And legally, we still do have the Constitutional Republic. Practically, it died a long time ago. You have two choices: go back towards it or give up and let it fall apart in earnest. That's where we're going. Something is going to change, and it's going to change soon. Is it going to be a good change or a bad change? That depends on how hard you work to make it a good change. All right? You ask yourself, why is there a Marine that took a wrong turn in San Diego in prison in Mexico? We say nothing about that. Why is Saeed Abedin, an American, in prison in Iran and being beaten and almost killed simply for preaching the gospel, why aren't we doing anything about that, right? Why was there a Marine, Hassoun, 10 years ago who deserted in Iraq? Why hasn't he been picked up, and why hasn't he been tried? And what's going to happen with Bergdahl? Well, I think those things kind of straighten it out for you. You know, there's a Sudanese woman who just had a baby in prison, and her crime is being a Christian. And she's married to an American, and she's an American citizen, and so are her kids. This administration says nothing. Now, you want to talk about their Muslim sympathies. You want to talk about how dangerous they are, traitors. Well, that's fine. But the issue is that they were elected or selected or whatever into a position that has more power than it should. If the position didn't have that much power, except for those specific enumerated powers and the things specified in the Constitution, the power-hungry corrupt wouldn't want it because they wouldn't be able to use it to their advantage. And that's what you have to get to, but that accountability is never going to come from anywhere other than you. Look below the surface. It's not the top of the iceberg that's the problem. It's what's under the water. It's not the fact that coffee costs $4 more than it did 10 years ago that's the problem. It's the devaluation of the currency. How does that work? What does that mean? What can I do about it? These are the things that you have to do. Which candidates even understand this? I guarantee you, you bring up the Federal Reserve to 90% of the Republican candidates that the mainstream has selected for you, they'll either avoid the topic or they don't even know about it. You ask Rand Paul, I guarantee you he'll give you an answer. And that's what you need. That's what you have to work for. That's where true activism and a spirit of patriotism, love of country, love of your fellow man, not love of your government. And the other option is to run around and, you know, government is an evil, a necessary evil. No, government is a good thing. We need government because that's how we order things together. It provides for coordination. It creates the rules and the conditions that give us a free market. It is what provides for the common defense in an organized structure. But the government we have is not good. The government we have is a problem because it is operating outside of its bounds, and it's because the citizens have allowed it to happen for so long. More people are awake now than they have been, but not enough. You thought them stealing the election from Ron Paul, the nomination from Ron Paul in 2012 would have done it. It didn't. You would have thought that Obama being elected would have done it. It didn't. You would have thought that these primaries here after the Republicans turned on you in the last race would do it. It didn't. So what do? Give up? No. The sentiment is there, but most people have been so unplugged and are not involved, they don't know what to do. They don't know where to go. The only thing they know how to do is vote, and they're not even sure who to vote for. So you just stick Tea Party in front of the candidate, they'll go vote for him. And that's not good enough. That's how you get Marco Rubios. So you have to be the one that teaches them. Every single day, reach out to three people, and don't talk to the same three people and talk back and forth to each other. That's not doing anything. Find three new people every day and get them involved in some way. Have them listen to the show. Have them go to Mises. Have them pay attention to Rand Paul. Have them understand the Federal Reserve. Have them look at their local primaries. Remember that this Tuesday, you have a boatload of them. All right? Now, last Tuesday was bigger, but this Tuesday is still going on. We're only halfway through the primary season. You got Arkansas, Maine, North Dakota, Nevada. We got a primary here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and you got South Carolina. What you have to make sure is that Lindsey Graham doesn't get the requisite number that he needs, and he's courting Democrat voters to secure that nomination, force him into a runoff. Well, I don't know. It's hopeless, Rex. He'll probably win because he's out there talking about impeaching Obama. Really? He's talking about it because it's a good selling point. He's in it. Remember the whole thing last time, right? They always get a nice conservative meat story for you right before one of their chief rhinos is up for election. That's what this is about. They gave him Bergdahl. He jumped on it. He's speaking it. People will hear, well, Lindsey Graham is talking about Gitmo detainees and impeaching President Obama, so I'm going to go vote for him. Lindsey Graham's never going to do any of those things. He's Obama's butt boy. That's who Lindsey Graham is. So don't fall for it. Make your calls into South Carolina. Get Lee Bright at least enough so that there's a runoff if you can't defeat Lindsey Graham on Tuesday. And if Lindsey Graham manages to pull it off in the runoff, he'll either have been forced to make a lot of actual conservative promises, which puts him in a position where he will really suffer some consequences for going the other way, or you will at least weaken him, and he'll have less clout. Remember something, Rand Paul is a junior senator, but he's on the Finance Committee. He's on the Foreign Affairs Committee. That's because there was such a groundswell of support from Kentucky for him and then nationwide that Mitch McConnell couldn't afford to ignore him, or Mitch McConnell would not have been reelected. It matters. The system isn't so rigged yet. Getting damn close, but it's not so rigged yet that the popular will doesn't count. It certainly does if you are organized enough and know what you stand for. Get familiar with the Constitution. These are important things. We're going to close with a clip now that talks about D-Day, Reagan talking about D-Day. D-Day is important, and this year was embarrassing. Obama's the one that went to speak there. He's just an embarrassment. I don't care if you even liked him the first time or if you were stupid enough to vote for him the second time. He's an embarrassment, especially next to world leaders like Vladimir Putin, which is just horrible. We're supposed to be on top. We're supposed to be the shining city. Instead, we've got this buffoon running around. Well, that's because you dropped the ball and let it happen. Yeah, it sucks. Take the responsibility, get off your ass, and fix it. Okay? But this is what's going on, and we have to restore that. Having a strong military is a thing to be proud of. Having a military used by certain banks and corporations to plunder the world is nothing to be proud of. We need to honor those men who serve by having them serve in the capacity of honorable defense and just war, not these debacles that they've been misused about, and they go over there and they get disillusioned, they come back, and then we let them die by making them wait 115 days for treatment in the VA. That's the kind of crap you get from government. Government doesn't do these things well because the people who run it will screw it up. So populate it with people who know how it works and roll back the expansion to its constitutional limits. Now, it seems daunting, but keep in mind something. Today is Pentecost. It's 50 days since Easter, 9 days since the Ascension. Now, whether you're a Christian or not is really not the point here. From a spiritual perspective, it matters. But remember that this country is based on principles that came to us through Western civilization, principles that are Christian in character. And if you happen to not be a believer and you don't believe in God and you don't believe in miracles and you don't believe Jesus is God, if you live in the West under our Constitution, if you understand liberty from a Western perspective, you're essentially a secular Christian. These concepts did not exist before the advent of Christianity. That's a fact. Okay, even atheists, some of them consider themselves secular Christians, meaning that they believe in the principles that Christianity espouses, even though they don't believe in the supernatural aspects of it, and they think most Christians are hypocrites. Fine, but the principles matter. And Pentecost is the day that the church was born, when the Holy Spirit descended upon the apostles. He gave them 7 gifts. And these are important gifts because whether you're looking at it from a spiritual perspective or from a practical perspective, they're very important. Those gifts are wisdom, understanding, knowledge, counsel, fortitude, piety, and fear of the Lord. Those gifts can fix this country if you ask for them, if you train them, if you hone them, if you share them, and you fight. Fortitude is very important because that is what gives us the courage to do the thing that we're afraid to do, or the resiliency to continue doing something even when it looks like it is pointless because the odds are so overwhelmingly against you. That's how wars are won. That's how change is made. And when you don't have the fortitude, bet your ass your enemy does, and you're losing because you're standing still. You always have to be assaulting tyranny and defending liberty. We've taken liberty for granted. You lacked the wisdom to make that discernment. You lacked the knowledge because you stopped learning and you stopped thinking. And as far as fear of the Lord goes, everybody has a religion. Even an atheist has a belief that God doesn't exist. If you believe that we are created for a purpose, if you believe that we have a free will to do those things which comport with the natural order, and you know that we have to organize that in society, through government, through civil institutions, through families, then you have a responsibility to make that happen. Instead, we're focused on the tip of the iceberg, and evil lurks underneath the water, and we're going to drown. make it work on Tuesday. Join us next Sunday at 9 and fight every single day for liberty. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
May the thunder of liberty rumble on.
We stand today at a place of battle, one that 40 years ago saw and felt the worst of war. Men bled and died here for a few feet of, or inches, of sand as bullets and shell fire cut through their ranks. About them, General Omar Bradley later said, "Every man who set foot on Omaha Beach that day was a hero." No speech can adequately portray their suffering, their sacrifice, their heroism. President Lincoln once reminded us that through their deeds, the dead of battle have spoken more eloquently for themselves than any of the living ever could, that we can only honor them by rededicating ourselves to the cause for which they gave a last full measure of devotion. Today, we do rededicate ourselves to that cause. And at this place of honor, we're humbled by the realization of how much so many gave to the cause of freedom and to their fellow man. Some who survived the battle of June 6, 1944, are here today. Others who hoped to return never did. Someday, Liz, I'll go back, said Private First Class Peter Robert Zanetta of the 37th Engineer Combat Battalion and first assault wave to hit Omaha Beach. I'll go back and I'll see it all again. I'll see the beach, the barricades, and the graves. Those words of Private Zanetta come to us from his daughter, Lisa Zanetta Henn, in a heart-rending story about the event her father spoke of so often. In his words, the Normandy invasion would change his life forever, she said. She tells some of his stories of World War II, but says of her father, the story to end all stories was D-Day. He made me feel the fear of being on that boat waiting to land. I can smell the ocean and feel the seasickness. I can see the looks on his fellow soldiers' faces, the fear, the anguish, the uncertainty of what lay ahead. And when they landed, I can feel the strength and courage of the men who took those first steps through the tide to what must have surely looked like instant death. Private Zanetta's daughter wrote to me, I don't know how or why I can feel this emptiness, this fear, or this determination, but I do. Maybe it's the bond I had with my father. All I know is that it brings tears to my eyes to think about my father as a 20-year-old boy having to face that beach. The anniversary of D-Day was always special for her family, and like all the families of those who went to war, she describes how she came to realize her own father's survival was a miracle. So many men died. I know that my father watched many of his friends be killed. I know that he must have died inside a little each time. But his explanation to me was, you did what you had to do, and you kept on going. When men like Private Zanetta and all our Allied forces stormed the beaches of Normandy 40 years ago, they came not as conquerors, but as liberators. When these troops swept across the French countryside and into the forests of Belgium and Luxembourg, they came not to take, but to return what had been wrongly seized. When our forces marched into Germany, they came not to prey on a brave and defeated people, but to nurture the seeds of democracy among those who yearn to be free again.
For inspiration, we salute them today. And guidance, I often look towards America's great military leaders. Some of the best observations on war and policy and diplomacy came from the president, who was also one of the most decorated generals, Dwight Eisenhower. Author David Nichols writes that Ike believed, with good reason, that once the violence begins, everything changes and you throw out your plans. You throw your plans in the trash. It's too bad more in Washington don't heed Ike's advice. There is no greater priority for the federal government, though, than the defense of the Constitution and the defense of the nation. Yet sometimes I think our defense is weakened by our over-eagerness to be involved in every civil war on the planet. In Egypt, the administration insists on sending F-16s and Abrams tanks to the new military junta. Before that, we sent arms and billions in aid to Morsi's radical Islamic government. And before that, we sent F-16s, tanks, and $60 billion to Hosni Mubarak, a dictator whom we called an ally. Common sense tells us that we probably shouldn't be sending our aid to military dictators or to the Muslim Brotherhood. Common sense tells us that we probably shouldn't be delivering advanced weaponry into unstable situations where the outcome is completely unpredictable. Common sense tells us that we shouldn't be sending foreign aid to nations that burn our flag. In Egypt, the regimes keep changing, but our system of foreign aid still stays the same. It's unbelievable. Unlike Eisenhower and earlier generations, we often don't think before we act. I think many in Washington do things in our foreign policy to accomplish short-term goals, but that they ultimately hurt our long-term national interests. As we continue to aid and arm despotic regimes in Egypt, we are also about to send weapons to Islamic rebels in Syria. This is problematic on multiple levels. The Assad regime is no friend to freedom or the United States, but this does not mean that the enemy of our enemy is our friend. There are currently 17 different rebel groups in Syria, including the largest group, al-Nusra. Al-Nusra fighters are radical, anti-American jihadists, and they're affiliated with al-Qaeda. But your politicians in Washington are eager to send weapons. They promise, oh, these weapons won't get into the hands of the enemy. I don't believe it. Does anyone believe that? We have trouble telling friend from foe in Afghanistan, which is much more stable. Syria is 1,000 times more chaotic. Even our chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, Martin Dempsey, General Martin Dempsey, warns it's becoming increasingly difficult to tell friend from foe in Syria. Would Eisenhower, who believed small wars could lead to big wars, would he buy into this nonsense? Even if you believe that we should arm Islamic fighters in Syria, shouldn't we at the very least have Congress vote on the matter? The Constitution is very clear. Congress is to declare war, not the president. Nevertheless, President Obama is moving ahead with plans to get involved in the Syrian civil war without the authorization of Congress. How can we ask our brave young men and women to fight against al-Qaeda in some countries and with al-Qaeda in other countries? Last week I was told by the administration, you know what their goal is in Syria? To fight to stalemate. I've told them I'm not sending my kids or your kids or any American soldiers to fight for stalemate. When we fight to win. We fight for American principles. We fight under the American flag. And we come home after we win. I believe Ronald Reagan got it right when he said, as for the enemies of freedom, those who are our potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it, but we will not surrender for it, now or ever. Reagan went on to say, our forbearance, though, should never be misunderstood. Our reluctance for conflict should not be misjudged as a failure of will. When action is required to preserve our national security, we will act. We will maintain sufficient strength to prevail if need be, knowing that if we do so, we have the best chance of never having to use that strength. For our country's sake, certainly for our soldiers' sake, for the sake of every veteran who has ever donned a uniform and fought for this country, America's mission should always be to keep the peace, not to police the world. An American, an America that did not seek to become involved in every conflict of the world, would take better care of our nation's greatest resources, our soldiers, including improving a broken VA system and better overall health care for those who have served. We must be more prudent, though, in our foreign policy. Eisenhower was right to observe that little wars often become big wars. Reagan was right that America's purpose is to promote peace through strength. Those of you here today, veterans of foreign wars, did your duty, and we honor your service to protect the peace. We pay our respect to you here today. We thank you for your service, and we also pay our respect to those who are not with us today, those who paid the ultimate sacrifice. Ronald Reagan once said, "Above all, we must realize that no arsenal or no weapon in the arsenals of the world is so formidable as the will and moral courage of free men and women. It is a weapon our adversaries in today's world do not have. America has always been a beacon of freedom to the world, due in no small part to the brave sacrifice and noble service of the members of the United States military. Today, I salute you and offer your nation's gratitude for a job well done. Thank you, and God bless America."